This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about grave robbers from outer space?
It is 19 minutes after the hour of 1, and this the month of October, the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along and making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, looming high above the milk packing district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, October 1st, 2010. This is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for coming by. It's 503-505-6964 if you would like to join us today. 503-505-6964. 1-800-795-6464. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. And Don Taylor could be emailed if that's your thing. It's don@rickemerson.com. don@rickemerson.com. The Skype box is... Let me make sure this is actually... This is actually true, so I'm not just passing along lies here. Yeah, okay, it's okay. You can Skype us directly if you'd like. That is Rick Emerson Show is the username of it. It's Rick Emerson Show, all one word, and the text box is up and functioning as well at rickemerson.com. It is Friday. Coming up today, we have Geek Watch. We have a Snuff Watch coming up today. And it just seems like we're doing it. This is like the fifth day in a row we've had one of those.
Someone has been dying every single day.
I don't even know who's dead now. Is this somebody that I would know?
Not really, no.
Is this somebody notable? Did they do something that affected my life?
Yes. But it's not someone whose name you know.
Did they invent something?
Yes.
Did they invent a food?
No.
Or a food-related product?
No.
Did they have something to do... I'm not going to do this forever, I swear to God. But did they have something to do with the automobile industry?
No.
Did... No, wait... Okay, did they have something to do with the broadcast industry?
No.
All right, I'm giving up. All right, well, so that's good. So we'll all find out together, kids. So Snuff Watch coming up later on today. Stupid Criminal of the Week. We have Geek Watch coming up. And Sarah Dillon and Greg Nibbler are going to be joining us in studio later on, around 2:30 for another crossover episode with Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler from Fun Employment Radio. And I don't know when we decided that this was just going to be our thing. I think it was we just sort of stumbled into this because of the business with the potato chips last month, where we had those guys on, and I think I'd already been planning to bring in. I think the day that we had Sarah and Greg in, and everybody brought two or three varieties of like snack chips. I think we had already been planning to have Doritos in because you'd never had the ones that taste like meat,
right?
You'd never had the cheeseburger Doritos, but then we followed that up a couple weeks later. It was just a whole series. It was like a bunch of Triscuits, and like you had that. I keep wanting to call it Potter's cheese, when I think Potter's cheese is, in fact, some sort of mold-like infection you get between your folds. Potter's cheese sounds like some sort of an ailment that, like, an Appalachian would get on his feet.
Oh, my God.
Well, he had a bad case of Potter's cheese. I'm afraid they had to come off at the ankle. What is it called? Pub cheese.
Pub cheese.
Not Potter's cheese.
Oh.
All right. Just afflicted by an ailment known only as Potter's cheese to the locals. Well, it's like when you hear about leprosy, which is also called Hansen's disease.
Yes.
So Potter's cheese would be some sort of a that'd be the local colloquialism for some sort of horrific sloughing skin ailment.
But I'm thinking that it's like some kind of like horrible yeast infection that you get.
All right, let's move on. We've officially crossed the line.
Especially since we were talking about food, and now it's disgusting.
Anyway, so today, so we moved on from, we did potato chips, then we did the Triscuits, and so today, Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler are going to be in the studio, and today the food theme is, I mean, let's be honest here, I mean, the genus never really alters. It does seem to be trashy food, in all of its many varieties, and today it is supermarket delicatessen food. And I mentioned during the break, actually, I got an email, I saw Greg going into a Safeway this morning just as I was leaving. I was pulling out of the parking lot, and Greg was coming in his truck. You're looking as he always does, Greg always looks like a seafaring man who has just escaped from Alcatraz, because he's got like he's got the long hair and he's got the stubble, but then he's always got that sort of knit cap, like he's going to be out walking the yard, and trying to figure out how to bust out of this joint.
The thing about Greg is actually a very handsome young man, but it's like he's one of those fellas that's trying really hard to deny his handsomeness. So he's going completely the opposite direction, failing to shave, letting the hair get a little too long, wearing the stocking cap all the time. Like he just wants to spit in the face of his God-given gifts.
See, here's the thing. I don't think it's that exactly. I don't think that Greg is trying to... I don't think he's trying to hide his light under a bushel, as they say in the good book. I think that Greg just isn't really aware that he's a good-looking guy. And,
Well, he must be aware. He's doing some acting. He has a lovely, lovely wife.
I don't know.
You don't ask a woman who's that good-looking out unless you're aware that you yourself...
I don't know that that's true.
Good-lookingness.
No, and Mrs. Nibbler's a very attractive lady. And so, I'm not saying that, like, she just picked some stooge of a husband or anything. Clearly, Greg is a good-looking guy, but I think that maybe he wasn't. I don't know that because he has an acting career, and because he's got a hot wife, that therefore he is necessarily aware of, you know, the fact that he's handsome. It's all turning very homoerotic. I'm just saying, it's hard to say this without sounding insulting, but it's not, you don't have to be good looking to be an actor as such. I mean, there are character actors. You got your Mike Starr, you got your Edward James Olmos, not traditionally handsome men, probably in some ways. They have a certain gravitas, but it's not like you look at them and go, they're the male models. So I don't necessarily know that would indicate to him that's the case. And, you know, who knows? Greg was, spent a lot of his time being a musician and in bands. It gives you a certain amount of presence and confidence and so forth. So he might have just asked out Mrs. Nibbler, and then she said, Mike. And then she, of course, thought, wow, this handsome fellow's asking me out on a date. But Greg, this whole time, may just think he's got her fooled. I mean, he may just be under the impression he's just pulled the wool over her eyes somehow. How did we get off onto the subject? Well, in any event, so I saw Greg pulling into the Safeway as I was leaving this morning, and then he sent me an email. He's like, I'm buying chicken strips right now. I don't know what Sarah's getting, though. Now, do you want to reveal what you have brought?
I'm fairly sure Sarah is going to be bringing the Safeway Chinese food, because that's what she kept going on
now,
about.
Now, see, but when you say Chinese food, that could mean any number of things. Yeah. I mean, there's just no... because I brought a little bit of Safeway Chinese food, but it doesn't necessarily overlap. Now, I brought something else as well. I brought two different bags, and I... We'll get back to this here in a second. What else is coming up today? We're going to talk to Mr. Jack Moralia, who is running the Portland Halloween Bazaar. And we'll have more to say about that later on in the month. But I wanted to get him on to talk about it just because it's just the coolest thing. And I had never really... I think it's like the third or the fourth year that they've had it. And I went last year because Aaron Duran had told me about it. And he sent me a text. And he's like, seriously, if you have never... He's like, you've got to come here. Now, he had a booth and he was pitching this comic that he's writing. And his wife, Jen, does some sort of like... Really, like, bizarre, like, arts and crafts, which I bought many of them, by the way. She had this whole thing. It's really difficult to describe one of the items that she was selling, but one of the things that Jen does is she'll get, like, sort of old stamps or clippings from magazines or photos from old newspapers or whatever, and then she will sort of make them into jewelry. Like, she'll sort of put it inside. It's not lucite, but it's a thing like that.
Yeah.
It's a bit like... Sounds dumb, but it's kind of like making sort of a high-class, like, shrinky-dink kind of a thing. But she did this thing where she took a series of bottle caps, and then on the underside of the bottle cap, you know, the side that faces in toward the bottle itself, she then put a series of Halloween-themed pictures inside and then sort of decorated the cap itself and put a magnet on the back, and so the refrigerator magnets. And they're really, really cool-looking. So I wanted to pick some of those up, so I went there last year. And the thing was just, like, astounding. I mean, I don't know what I expected, but it was really, really quite something. So we're going to talk to Jack Moralia, who runs the Portland Halloween Bazaar, later on this hour. Let's see, what else? We have stories being followed by Don Taylor on your Friday afternoon. They include the following.
The gubernatorial candidates met and sparred over various issues. Congress has...
By the way, you have never before talked about a story that you so clearly didn't follow or watch or know anything about until this morning.
Well, I know a little bit about it. It's right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So some guys met in a room and they talked about some stuff in a place.
Exactly.
All right. Okay.
NASA is going to lay off 1,200 workers, and some police horses were hit by a car.
We've also got another installment of Pop Culture Authority coming up today. Today's Pop Culture Authority question, why did there need to be an actor inside of R2-D2? And have no illusions about this. There has been an actor inside the R2-D2 outfit for all six Star Wars films, even Revenge of the Sith. So we'll answer the question today, why did there need to be an actor inside R2-D2? That's coming up later on. It's 503-505-6964, the Rick Emerson Show, brought to you today by a variety of business partners, including but not limited to Mr. Michael Beatty, proprietor of The Cleaning Solution, at 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. And real quickly, speaking of Halloween, I don't know if you've gone to my Facebook page recently. Have you seen this whole thing that Scott Landerville, who's one of our listeners, has got going with this spider that he's keeping as a pet in his garage?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. That was a thing that I'd somehow managed to avoid for the better part of this week. Because, you know, there's that thing on Facebook where every time you post something, everything sort of shifts down one spot. And I think if I had just waited... Are you wiping liquid off of your bosom?
Well, I had... Yeah, apparently so, yes.
All right. So Dawn is wearing today, by the way, sort of a zip-up, like a sweatshirt kind of a thing, like a pullover. Not a hoodie as such, because there's no hood on it, but it's sort of a zip-up pullover. And I look over just now, and you've got a towel, and you're just mopping your...
I dripped,
mopping off your cleavage. There's no other way to put it.
I dripped a little Vizo down into the cleavage.
Really? Is that what the boys like these days?
It was cold.
Okay.
And so I took a paper towel and I was, yes.
Okay. It's like cocaine off the back of a hooker, except it's
right.
not a hooker and it's Vizo and it's not your back.
It's very Portland.
All right.
Just, come on, you want to do Vizo out of my cleavage?
Would you like to... Would you like to suck some Pabst out of my navel, big sailor man? Jesus Christ. I don't even... There are days that I just feel like the fingernail grasp of control that we have on the show is just sort of slipping away from us. Yes?
Oh, I realized I was completely wrong about the snuff watch because both the taser watch and the snuff watch involve people who are somewhat notable being killed, but the actual snuff watch... I was wrong. It was someone who was in the entertainment industry.
Okay. All right. So it is a notable death.
Yes.
All right. So that's
and
all
it is
up.
Someone you've heard of. So.
But just real quickly, back to this business about Facebook. So every time you post something on Facebook, it knocks everything else down like one space. And if I had just waited until like tomorrow to go and just really get, you know, because I don't get a chance to check it every day. I try to when I try to respond, if somebody asks a direct question or something. But it's like, you know, there's lots to do in this big, crazy world.
You've gotten much better about it.
I have tried to. Well, Cheryl really just, here's the thing you will learn about me if you have not already, and I suspect that you have, is that in every aspect and in every facet of my life, you will find that there is a woman who is figuratively beating me to get me to do things that I ought to have done already, or who's keeping me on task, as they used to say in high school.
And for a while, Cheryl was actually keeping up your Facebook for you, and people figured it out.
Yeah, no, I think people... Well, we weren't trying to... It wasn't like we were trying to sort of to fool anybody. It's not like she logged in as me. I mean, she didn't ever sign on, like, as Rick Emerson or something. It was, in fact, the opposite. It was that I would respond on Facebook, and people assumed it was her, because they just figured... People would actually ask her, they'd say, is this really Rick writing these responses, or is this Cheryl? Because they figured that I was just sort of a helpless infant without somebody around, which is largely the case. I have no illusions about that.
Or just so very important and very, very busy that you can't be bothered to go on the Facebook.
It was just a lot to get done, but I try to be better about sort of keeping up with it every day. But I don't always get to scroll all the way to the bottom and kind of just see everything that is there. The point is, if you go to my Facebook page, you're going to see this photo gallery that Scott Landerville has put up of this spider that is like, I mean, it's like the size of a dinner plate that's living in his garage that he now has grown so attached to that he goes out and he catches insects and brings them in and like tosses them into the web and says, here, Bessie, here you go. And he throws it in. And there's a photograph of what looks to be like a large cricket or a grasshopper or something who's having the worst day of his life because some large fleshy creature came and snatched it up out of the garden and then hurled it into a spider web. And the thing is, spiders only live, for like a month or something. So there's clearly going to be some heartbreak on the horizon for him when the spider shuffles off its mortal coil. But if you really, I'm just saying, if you're afraid of spiders or if you know somebody who is, I mean, just they want to stay away from like the bottom third of my Facebook page, for today.
Whatever happened to your giant spider by your box there?
I had this whole, and you can go to rickemerson.com/pictures, and you can go to the visual aid section there at rickemerson.com/pictures. You can see a photograph of the spider. I had this whole thing happening yesterday afternoon where I had the barbecue tongs out, and I was holding a quarter at arm's length, and then I had the iPhone camera in the other hand, and I was trying to get a photograph of the spider where I would get the spider and the quarter so there would be an object of known size so you could get a sense of scale for how large the thing is. Because you're the biggest goddamn spider I've ever seen that wasn't like in South America or something.
You are a real object of interest to your neighbors, aren't you?
I am. Especially because they look at it and I'm effectively covered in like a Devo suit because I've just got, if I'd had like a beekeeper's, like one of those, like one of those like wig netting things to put over my head, I would have done that, but I didn't. So I have the iPhone in one hand and I have the barbecue tongs and the quarter in another, which is the only time anybody's ever said that phrase. And I'm leaning in toward the spider outside my house. And then I inadvertently, because when the spiders build the web, they're crafty, you see. They're clever. They have the normal part of the web where they sit and where they then bring, things that they've caught and they sort of wrap them up and then they go back to just sort of, sitting around. And then they have the anchor threads that go off to the house that sort of stabilize the web. I mean, it really is fascinating. It's a feat of engineering when you think about it. But then they've got those other webs, the little trailing webs that go off that are sort of the trip wires. like the Viet Cong used to say, that let them know that something has stumbled into their perimeter. Because it's like, you know, they got 75 eyes, but that's because they can't see all that well.
Yeah, but they have specific threads that are designed to vibrate.
Yeah.
So that when something comes in, they can feel the vibrations that something new has entered the
right, and then area. they can just go over and capture the thing. So as I mean, I don't even like to tell this story because it makes me sound like a colossal pussy, which I am. But I mean, just telling it, I feel like one of those vets who's trying to relay, you know, running into like an IED or something by the side of the road, and then he's just falling into PTSD shock again. But so I've got the iPhone in my hand, and I've got the barbecue tongs in the quarter, and I'm leaning in, and you know, and I'm doing that thing where I'm not like an idiot. I'm not watching the spider like. With my own eyes, I'm watching the whole action through the viewfinder of the iPhone, and I'm leaning in, and then I inadvertently bump one of the tripwires with the quarter, and then the spider like springs to life and starts scampering toward it. And I was like, "Ah!" You know, and I just I managed to hold onto the iPhone, but I just dropped all my crap and I just ran into the house screaming like a small girl the entire way. Even telling the story now freaks me out. Jesus. So anyway, it was just the thing doesn't want to be photographed, and you know what? He and I are just going to have sort of an uneasy truce. We're going to reach a détente and just move forward. I have nothing else to say before we head into the news segment here, except to say this: that immediately before we came on the air this afternoon, I don't even know what I was mentioning now, but Dawn had her headphones on, and I was trying to get your attention to bring up something about something about Greg or Sarah or the food or whatever. And I finally was like waving my arms because you had it, and I said, "Hello, can I get your attention for a second?" And you took off your headphones and I wrote this down. Dawn just said, "I'm sorry, I was looking at kittens."
I was.
So the next time you try to toss any sort of crap my way from my rash generalization about female behavior, I'm going to remind you that I had to get your attention away from the internet because you were distracted by pictures of kittens.
Well, to be fair, we did this story in the last hour about how the Humane Society has this whole, like, robotic kitten room where you can see the cats.
This is not a room full of robotic kittens, by
no.
the way.
No, but it's apparently you can, I don't know, operate toys or move a camera around. I'm not sure exactly how it works because I went to go see it, and first of all, A, all the cats are asleep right now, and B, you have to use Internet Explorer to use it. You have to have Windows
right. And
use Internet Explorer. And I'm looking at, I have
Firefox.
Firefox. And so I either use Firefox or Chrome. I don't ever use Internet Explorer. So I was going, crap, I can't look at the kitten. So then I was looking and I was trying to figure out if it would work anyway. And I clicked on it and then I got the error message. And that's about the time I saw you like flailing your arms about.
Okay.
And so I had to explain.
You don't need to explain to me.
It wasn't so much I was looking at kittens as I was trying to look at kittens and I was being thwarted.
You were trying to look at kittens.
I was.
Okay.
I was trying to look at kittens.
So you were not only easily distracted by pictures of kittens, you were, in fact, not able to successfully view them.
Right.
Okay.
I wanted to be distracted by kittens, but I wasn't allowed to be.
All right. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Oh, and I don't have time to get to this now, but I got, and really this is a bold statement, I received the gayest thing ever in the mail yesterday. I've got this right here. I'm just going to show you this one photograph. It's the new Macy's catalog. And if you've received anything from Macy's recently, you'll know this is the one that says "Find Your Magic" on the front. I'm just going to show you. I'm going to show you one photograph from this, Don. I'm just going to show you just the one random picture. Let me just. I guess it's not random, but let me just flip through. I'm going to pick one picture from this catalog, and I'm going to show it to you. And we'll go through the rest of this. You can see this at the visual aid section of rickemerson.com, by the way, rickemerson.com/pictures. It's an entire catalog of photos like this.
Oh, that's precious.
Now that's, I mean, it looks not like I'm passing judgment, not like I care, but is that not one of the gayest photographs?
It's freaky, though, because that is so not like male model-ish either. It's like, It's like a pretty, just barely past teenage boy making an adorable face wearing an expensive leather jacket.
Yeah. I mean, this is,
Actually, there are much gayer pictures. I was looking at the...
Did you look through
catalog? No, I just pulled up the album, so I saw...
Yeah.
I just saw the thumbnails and was just like, oh, my, yeah, I believe they're a couple.
Right there on the cover?
On the cover, yeah.
They're together. It's a stylish a man posing next to a stylish woman. Clearly, I don't know anything about her. Clearly, he... I think he is there and is doing his best to look sexually interested in her, and it's not really working.
And then the picture that's facing you, the one in the back with the handsome young man in his schoolboy tie and his artful geek glasses making a smoochy face.
Puckering his lips at the camera like a Nancy. So there you go. If you get a chance, go to rickemerson.com/pictures. And I mean, it was really just staggeringly gay. So much so that I showed it to Sarah and I said, Sarah, I'm going to flip through a couple pictures here and I want you to just give me the first word that comes to mind for each. And it was like, I got to the third picture and she just went gay, 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 hot and gay, gay. Ooh, really hot, really gay. So I, again, it's not like I take offense. It's just one of those things where I wonder, like, have I made some purchase at Macy's? Has there been some combination of products bought by me that then triggered a specific kind of catalog to be sent to me? Because, for example, it's like if they wouldn't have sent you this catalog. You would have gotten a catalog filled with ladies' things. So they do have some differentiation of catalogs that are sent to your home based on the purchases you have made.
Yeah, there's something that you bought.
There's an algorithm.
You got on a mailing list.
It's like a TiVo thing, though, where it's like, you know, the more things you set on TiVo, you give the thumbs up or the thumbs down, but the TiVo learns what you like and then it starts to predict based upon your past choices what programs you might enjoy. And so I have bought the right or wrong combination of items, depending on how you look at it, at Macy's, to indicate that, A, I'm much skinnier and prettier than I really am, and also that I am colossally homosexual.
Yeah, have you recently bought, like, expensive cologne or thong underwear through the mail?
Maybe. Hmm. No. No, in fact, I don't have time to get bogged down in this.
Have you started listening to Coldplay?
No, I have not. So, now I feel like maybe Macy's is trying to tell me something. Like, maybe they know more about my own predilections than I do.
Are you buying, like, $50 heated shaving gel?
See, I'm not. But again, it's like I feel like maybe they are predicting things that they think I would look good in, or things that might accentuate my features in just the right way.
You are a TV star.
Yes.
You know,
well,
so obviously they know you need fancy duds and such.
The public affairs audience gets only the best, Dawn.
Yes.
All right. At the news desk, ladies and gentlefolk, this is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
The Democratic and Republican candidates for governor squared off in their only scheduled televised debate last night at 7 p.m. at KGW Studios. Former Governor John Kitzhaber and Chris Dudley participated in a live broadcast debate sponsored jointly by KGW and The Oregonian. Early in the debate, Dudley responded to questions about his lack of experience by saying, "The past two governors have 60 years of experience between them, and here we are." That sounds kind of snotty. He added, "We need experience from outside, a governor with vision." Asked why he should be elected governor again after serving 8 years previously, Kitzhaber said that in light of the current economic crisis facing the state, quote, "We need a governor with experience who shares the values of Oregonians." They talked about jobs and the economy.
You know, the whole little verbal dodge he's doing there when he says, "Well, the last two guys had experience and now everything's in the toilet." I mean, that's the sort of, you understand why he does that, because that is the sort of non-logic that appeals to the average American. You know, just like your typical, like, mouth breather hears that and goes, "Well, by God, he's got a point there."
Playing to the non-incumbent vote, basically.
It just makes no logical sense. I mean, it's just sort of like, well, the last presidents had their arms and legs, and so look where we are now. It's time for a quadriplegic in office.
Yeah, guys who knew what they were doing had this job, and now there's me, and I don't have any idea what I'm doing because I've never done it before, so it's got to be better.
All of these things aside, here's the thing I don't really understand about any of this. I don't understand the relationship between running for governor and the word gubernatorial.
Yeah.
What the hell? What is,
I don't know
is
why
that,
it's gubernatorial and not like governatorial.
Is it like a German thing or something? Doesn't it seem like it ought to be a German word? Like gubernatorial, it seems like it's like kindergarten or one of those things. Wunderkind.
Or relating to peanut products.
Perhaps. So I've just never understood the relation there, and I guess I could look it up, but I can't be bothered.
It always bothers me, too.
I'd rather just kvetch about it, Dawn.
Kitzhaber said Dudley would give a huge tax cut primarily to the wealthiest Oregonians that would do nothing to benefit the majority of middle-class Oregonians. Dudley said what distinguished him from Kitzhaber is that Kitzhaber believes government and politicians create jobs, whereas Dudley said he believed the private sector and businesses create jobs. Kitz Harbor said Oregonian suffered from an over-reliance on an income-based tax system. I personally believe we've got to diversify our tax base, he said, saying it's a discussion we can no longer avoid, whereas Dudley responded that the state should get spending under control first and then address the revenue side.
When they say diversify our tax base, is that code for getting a sales tax?
Probably.
I mean, that's because what else does it mean? It's not like you. It's not like you can find new people that like we can can't tax Californians or something.
No. It's definitely his way of saying that he wants us to have a sales tax, which is one of that always drives me a little bit crazy because they always insist that what'll happen is this will allow them to not raise income taxes further. But the thing is, what it'll do is they'll continue to take the same amount of income tax and maybe even raise income taxes, and then they'll give us a sales tax. Plus, they say, we'll institute a sales tax, and it will be, say, 6%, and it'll never be any higher than that. And then, you know, a few years go by, and then you're like California, and it's like, you know, 10 or 11 or 12%.
And I got to say, I can't think of a whole lot of things you could do that would absolutely lead to some sort of an uprising here in Oregon. But instituting a sales tax is one of them. And I think for a lot of people, it's not even really a matter of money. It's not, you know, it's not that it's going to kill you to spend like 7 cents on the dollar or something. It's just the pain in the ass of not knowing how much anything costs.
Yeah.
Because every time you go to another state, and I've lived here for, you know, 12 years or something now, you go to another state, you go, that'll be, I mean, you've probably done this where you go on vacation somewhere and the guy says, that'll be, you know, it's $5.99, you put $6 down and the guy goes, no, plus tax, that'll be $6.78. And then you realize that everything you're going to buy, you have to sit there and just like try to calculate the cost before you stand at the cash register.
Yeah, when I spent the first 2/3 of my life in California, and yeah, there was a point at which like the sales tax at one point was like, I think 8.5%. And you just immediately just do this thing in your head, this math of just like rounding up 10% was the easiest thing to like, you know, I'm spending $23 on something, so 10% of that would be $2.30, so it's going to be $25. You know, you have to actually do that in your head.
And the other thing is, well, first, we have the sales tax, or we have the sales tax debate, which is going on right now, but I was always told, and maybe this is just wrong, that one of the reasons we get away with not having a sales tax is because we have parking meters everywhere, where a lot of cities, you know, our size don't have parking meters. You know, parking is just, it's like a first come, first serve thing, but they don't, you know, they don't have to pay for it. And so that one balanced out the other. So as you just said, not only will they keep the income tax the same or probably raise it at some point if they institute a sales tax, but you know, that's not like they're going to then reduce the cost of parking.
No.
That's not going to be a thing they're going to do either. When you come to Oregon and you don't have the sales tax, it's like when you come here and you realize you don't have to pump your own gas anymore. And it seems like such a small thing, but really is just the most it's like yesterday's conversation with Anna Griffin. We were talking about having like seat warmers or a moonroof in your car. It seems like a thing that is just, you know, where it's just a frill, where it shouldn't matter all that much until you actually live under a system where you don't have to pump your own gas, and then you can just never go back. I mean, I cannot tell you the number of times that I've had that little like the light come on in the car that says like, you know, you only have 5 miles before you are out of gas. But I find myself in Vancouver, and it's that whole thing of like, which is going to be worse? The idea that I might run out of gas and you know, and just have to trudge on by the side of the road, or that I might actually have to go pump my own fuel. And I usually just try to pound it over the bridge as fast as I possibly can to get back into like the Jansen Beach area so that I can get some guy to come put the gas in my car, because it's, the prospect, you know, having to do it myself is just, it's just intolerable.
Basically, in response to a question from the audience member, an audience member who asked, what's the biggest difference between the two of you? Dudley replied, besides size, because, you know, I guess because he's a ex-basketball player and he's tall.
All right.
I don't think he was talking about his penis. He then emphasized his belief that Oregon needed to go in a new direction and that the biggest difference was that he would focus on job creation in the private sector.
And hold on. So he's not talking about his penis, but we need to go in a new direction.
Yes.
Does he have a new direction for schools as well?
He actually said Oregon. And I love the fact that I think this was the KGW notes that I got here. They actually put that in quotation marks. They made sure of putting this in the story his belief that Oregon needed to go, quote, in a new direction.
I would like for
unquote. I think somebody knew. Someone knew.
I'd like for Oregonians to embrace my new direction and to clutch it to their figurative bosom.
Kitzhopper replied that Dudley indeed had a younger face, but was selling old ideas that he said came right out of the George Bush era. Quote, $800,000 in tax breaks, primarily for the rich, that have no real value for middle-class Oregonians. So, and there was more stuff they talked about, but who cares?
You know, it's one of those things where just I wish that I could somehow just project you into like the straight world of journalism, just to have you reporting on KGW and saying, you know, and Dudley responded by saying, "Do you mean except for size?" And I don't believe he was talking about his penis. Don Taylor, KGW News. Just to sort of liven things up a little bit. Just like a little splash of color. By the way,
It have been awesome if he was talking about his penis, though?
I mean, he should just say, look, and I've got a massive schlong here. And
look
I
at
think-
me. Look at I'm a monster. I'm huge. Think about how large my penis is.
And just say, look, and I've got all the testosterone that comes with that. So if you want a man who is poorly endowed to continue to lead your state further into the darkest time in its history, then you can vote for my opponent.
Yeah, what's Kitzhaber got? He's got a mustache. Me, I'm freakishly huge.
We have two messages in the text box. One says, where is the website with the photos? That is rickemerson.com/pictures. The other one is actually about the photo section. It's about the gayest catalog ever. And he says, I am a gay man and the photos are so gay they make me feel positively straight. So there you go. You know what I should do? I mean, just to test the theory of maybe the Macy's catalog. Look at this photo
Don't
right here.
Don't you wish we had Byron here today?
Just look at that photo. This is on page. And these are all, by the way, these are all at rickemerson.com/photos. Or I'm sorry, rickemerson.com/pictures. You can see these. There's one in here later on. I swear to God. It's right here. This is the one with the guy holding a trumpet. So he's a fresh-faced youth. I swear to God, getting ready to blow a trumpet. And then at the bottom, there's this sort of text in a wavy, in a wavy script, and it says, "Acts of magic that carry you away," and it ends in a big arrow pointing at his penis.
Yeah, it's just coming right
just
from his penis,
pointing at his Johnson. So I wonder if I should try on one of these outfits, just you know, as like a goof, just to see, you know, just to see if maybe it clicks somehow. I should just replicate one of the photos from this catalog
to see if perhaps
they know more about my own style than I do. Let's do one more here, and then we'll have installments of today's Pop Culture Authority. Today's Pop Culture Authority answers the question, why was there an actor inside R2-D2? Why was there the need for the actor inside R2-D2? Here is Don Taylor.
Congress's passage of a multi-billion-dollar budget for NASA this week won't stop more than 1,200 workers from being laid off today. The Planetary Society's Louis Friedman says the cuts represent painful short-term losses, while the budget could represent long-term gains.
The $19 billion budget is a strong statement by Congress and by the president that we want a vigorous NASA doing great things. Unfortunately, it's gotten caught up very much in contractor arguments, contractor differences.
Friedman with the Planetary Society says there could be other opportunities for these workers in the future.
What we need to do now is to decide exactly what the future is going to bring in terms of new rockets and engaging the new commercial industry. There should be many more jobs just from the private sector.
So this is from NASA proper, or this is from some sort of side? I mean,
he's from some society.
They're like 50 from the Planetary Society.
Yeah.
So I wonder if the Planetary Society is one of those groups of people who think that they're NASA employees, but really they're just guys working in the gift shop.
I don't know, because I hear the Planetary Society reminds me, I can't remember the name of them, but there was this really strange, weird cult that had their headquarters like literally a half a block away from me when I lived in California in Hollywood. And they were all people who believed that space aliens like lived among us, and that Atlantis had been real and was a space colony of space aliens.
Hey,
and they have one of those names like the Planetary Society.
I don't mean to sound like a colossal boob here, but here's something, and I know that this is one of the things that I'm going to say it out loud. Somebody, I was talking about Castalia Language Center earlier, and somebody said, is there perhaps some sort of a science school of no more than 8 people per class that we can put Dawn and Rick in so that they will quit saying such ridiculous things out loud? I feel like I know the answer to this, and I feel and I have preemptive shame for even asking, but I feel like I got to ask. Wasn't there something a couple years ago? Did they not find like the water or something like water on Mars? Is there
yes.
something? Okay. So I'm not making that up.
No,
they found some kind of water-like substance
right.
on Mars.
Yeah.
Okay. So now based on that,
Have we now gone back and reversed our previous reversal on the whole business of there being like sort of like canal things that were, you know, the water once ran down on the surface?
That I don't know.
See? Okay. So I immediately feel better. See, it doesn't matter if I get taunted for this in the future or not. Now, I know that you and I are on the same ignorant page, so at least we will be scorned together. Because that's one of those things that they said in the 30s. And then they just sort of rejected it, and they said that it was just a big load. But then a couple of years ago, they found water, and so I was unclear. And I asked a couple of people, I forget where I even was. I don't think it was my wife. I was somewhere the other day, and I actually asked a couple of people who were standing around, like, are there canals on Mars? I don't remember where I was that I asked this, but it was like nobody really knew. And it seemed like one of those things that we ought to have an answer for by now, but we've sort of gone back and forth on it.
Right. Thomas Gold jumped in, and the Planetary Society is a group. We had talked about them having a really cool meeting about a couple months ago. It's the group that Bill Nye and Robert Picardo and a bunch of JPL and NASA people all belong to.
Oh, okay. All right. Somebody says in the text box, it hasn't changed. Liquid-made trenches are there. This is a text box comment. I'm not saying this definitively because I don't know. Liquid-made trenches are there, which means there was liquid there. It was, if it was water, we don't know. It would have been millions of years ago, so it's moot. See, that's the sort of thing said in the voice of authority that I instinctively believe, but I have no actual proof that it's correct.
Anyone who says the word moot in conversation, they just sound to me like they know what they're talking about. I'll believe anything if someone uses the word moot.
Duly noted. Let's take a moment to talk about our good friend Michael Beatty, proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. You can find out more about him and his fine business at 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. We've been trying to do two different things here. One is I was trying to think of something we could have him, some filthy object we could have him clean. Insert joke here, I suppose. But we've been trying to find some way for him to come in and demonstrate his cleaning acumen. Because the floor of this studio is, it's not flat-out horrible at the moment. No. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not spick and span. But
it
needs
vacuuming more than it needs, like, steam cleaning.
Yeah, that's the thing is, it doesn't, you give us 6 months or so, and, it'll just be flat-out foul. It'll be a petri dish. But at the moment, it really just needs a good once-over with a Kirby or something. So I've been trying to find some way for Michael Beatty to demonstrate the skill with which he can clean, you know, your carpets, your entryway, stone, marble, tile, whatever it is. And then we found out the other day that we've got access to a Segway. And it seems like I ought to be able to merge the two of those things together somehow. Because that's the other front on which I'm failing. Is that we found out that there's a guy who can get it. There's a guy who knows a guy. I know a guy who knows a guy who has a Segway. And he said, if you want to use a Segway at some point for like a day or so on the show, he's like, I can get you a Segway. And I posted a thing on Facebook about this. And I was saying, like, we got access to a Segway. And I feel like I got to turn in like my zany DJ card because I can't come up with any ideas for it.
Well, we get a long piece of remnant carpet and we lay it like down the sidewalk outside. Then we get like something dirty, like some mud or some grime or some motor oil or something. We drive the Segway through the dirty stuff and across the carpet and make the carpet dirty with the Segway. And then we have Michael Beatty remove the ground-in Segway tracks from the carpet.
Maybe I could actually drag the carpet down the street behind the Segway. I could use the Segway to drag the carpet through some horrific variety of substances and refuse and so forth. And just, turning the carpet, dirty and then having him clean it there.
Yeah. Maybe you could put a number of items on the carpet, like cups of coffee or in bowls of soup.
And then I can use the Segway to grind it in.
Or no, just pull it behind you and see how far you can go on the Segway without spilling the soup and the coffee. But of course, it will eventually naturally spill. Then you have to clean the carpet.
I feel like this is an idea still in its embryonic stages. Yeah. I don't feel like I've really put it together
yet. No, it's not really working so
well. In any event, for your home or your office, business or residential, Mr. Michael Beatty is the one-stop answer to all of your cleaning needs for anything your feet might touch, whether it's damage from pets or whether it's just the normal wear and tear on your carpet. You call him at 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. Mr. Michael Beatty, who is our very first advertiser here and is a proud business partner of the Emerson News Network. Mr. Michael Beatty, proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. Find out more at 971-533-3211. Why did there need to be an actor inside R2-D2?
From the Emerson News Network, this is Pop Culture Authority.
I'm Rick Emerson. He is perhaps the most lovable non-organic creature in the galaxy, or in those far, far away. An astromech droid who served not only Luke Skywalker, but Anakin Skywalker, Qui-Gon Jinn, and the Defense Forces of Naboo, R2-D2 has been both helpful and hapless, both crotchety and courageous, blinking and beeping and appearing in all six Star Wars films. Also appearing in all six Star Wars films, appearing in point of fact in R2-D2, is British actor Kenny Baker, who, along with Anthony Daniels as C-3PO, is the only actor to appear in all of the officially sanctioned Star Wars episodes. But wait, you say? At least C-3PO is a man, or at least humanoid. He walks and talks just like one of us. Of course he had to be played by a person inside a suit. But why wasn't R2-D2 just remote-controlled? Well, the answer is that he was. Sometimes. George Lucas, it should come to no one's surprise, explored early on the idea of using mechanized or remote-controlled droids and creatures whenever possible, partially because Lucas simply adores technology, and one suspects partially because actors made of wire and tin are less likely to talk back or have lawyers. So, as preparations for Episode 4, New Hope, the so-called original Star Wars, as preparations for the filming got underway, a variety of R2-D2s were created, all of them by Mr. John Steers, who also designed Luke's land speeder, the Jedi Knight's lightsabers, and James Bond's Aston Martin. Though memories have grown somewhat hazy, it's generally accepted that at filming there were six R2s, three remote control units, two meant to be destroyed or otherwise damaged, and two containing a compartment inside which actor Kenny Baker ensconced himself. The reason? Well, simple practicality. First, even on a major motion picture, there were certain limitations to 1970s remote control technology. The remote-controlled R2-D2s could turn their heads, flash their lights, or roll down a hallway. Here's a hint. Anytime you see R2 moving along using all three legs, that's the remote-controlled unit. Now, what those models couldn't do was jump, rock, shake, or vibrate. So, the sequence in which Luke and Uncle Owen are negotiating a droid purchase with a Jawa salesman, for example, Luke and Owen select the R5-D4 and begin to leave. R2 becomes noticeably agitated, wobbling and rattling and making his unhappiness known. All the movements are those of Kenny Baker, the man inside the droid suit, and they're executed with human movements. So when R2 wobbles back and forth in panicked frustration, that is in fact Kenny Baker wobbling back and forth, something the remote-controlled unit simply could not accomplish. The second reason was that even the most reliable remote-controlled R2-D2s went a little wonky in the Tunisian desert where Episode 4 was filmed. The heat and generally strange properties of the desert air played havoc with the remote control systems, and they were often unusable. As for Kenny Baker continuing to act inside the R2-D2 suit even after CGI made that unnecessary, hard as it might be to believe, most of those in a position to know credit George Lucas's desire to offer ongoing work to many of the original Star Wars actors whenever possible, showing that although R2-D2 may now be more machine than man, the same, perhaps, cannot be said of his creator.
The final word on the only knowledge that matters. Pop Culture Authority from the Emerson News Network.
Struck by stuff. You say a little prayer should the day get rough. Then you step on out, man, and strut your stuff.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on today, we have Geek Watch on the way. Now I'm so confused. So the snuff watch, it is a snuff watch. It's not a taser
right.
watch.
Yeah, I had a snuff watch and a taser watch. I didn't put taser watch on the board. And then, and I got, and the taser watch is about someone dying. So it all got very confused in my own mind.
All right, well, we'll pause all of this. As long as you know what's going on, because I almost assuredly don't.
Sure. Okay. I'm in complete control.
Look over there. As well, have the Snuff Watch coming up later on. Geek Watch, Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler from Fun Employment Radio will be joining us in the studio later on for another crossover segment. So, now, did I already ask you what you purchased at the
you
deli?
You did, but then you went talking about something else, and then it got completely... So, I didn't actually answer you.
Is it one of those things where I asked you a question and then immediately began talking about myself again?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
indeed. What did you purchase for our food segment later?
I brought meatballs in a bourbon barbecue sauce. And roasted squash.
What kind of a supermarket is this?
It's Hagen. I told you, it's a fancy supermarket
with
fancy food.
You know, it's like we don't look trashy enough most of the time. You got to go like putting our faces in it by bringing something with, soaked in bourbon.
I went there yes, because it's fancy if it's got booze.
I was just going to say, having said that out loud, now I realize now that maybe the trash quotient has been preserved. Never mind. I withdraw the complaint.
I bring meatballs with bourbon on them. Yes, it's classy.
That sounded a whole lot different in my head than it did out loud, actually. It sort of has a delightful Peggy Hill style ring to it, having said it. Don Taylor is tracking the following stories for you on this Friday.
Police horses were hit by a car. I got nothing.
All right.
I'm
well,
all distracted.
In an alternate universe, Don Taylor is tracking those stories for you. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. We've been talking about the Portland Halloween Bazaar, which is coming up on Sunday, October 10th, which is just a couple weeks from now. Mr. Jack Moralia, who you're going to be able to see this coming Sunday on Outlook Portland as well. Jack Moralia, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Let me get a little bit
Rick.
Closer to the microphone there, if you can. Just lean on in.
Okay.
So the Halloween Bazaar, and I've told the story a couple times, I told it earlier this hour, actually, that last year I got this text message from Aaron Duran, who had a booth there, and he was pitching a comic book that he had written, and his wife does these sort of this great sort of spooky artwork, and he, you know, and it was like half caps. It was like, you've got to come to the Halloween festival. It's fantastic. You're awesome. You bring shame on your family if you don't attend.
Right.
And I basically, and it all has a happy ending, but he basically nagged me into it because I was like, well, I'm doing this thing, and I'm on the other side of town. I got all this stuff and whatever. And he's just like, if you don't come here, you're really going to regret it. And I don't quite know what I expected, but before I even got into the joint, all I remember is it was something outside. It was like a giant or a spider or possibly a giant spider. And then I walked in, and then there was a pirate who handed me a bag of something and said, "Greetings, yar!" and like, you know, poked me with a sword. And then there was like the Tarantino Death Proof car that I saw, and it was like I'd fallen into some.
Well, that's the thing is that you cannot really describe the Portland Halloween Bazaar until you go. And what I can decipher what you just said, we had there is a guy who makes giant framed costumes up in Washington called Giant Clown Live, and he does these giant costumes on roller skates. So he showed up randomly on his own.
So he's on stilts and skates.
Yes, basically. this is our co-director Jane Hollenbeck's here helping me describe this because it is difficult to describe.
And let me back up a moment. Did you say giant clown something?
Yeah, yeah. Giant Clown. It's like Giant Clown Live. It's on YouTube. He goes downtown Portland and stands around. He looks like a statue, and then suddenly he'll spring to life and scare the bejesus out of
people. Here's what you got to know is that there's somebody in this room who is terrified of clowns.
Oh, yeah.
He's one of
those guys that like looks for to find out that people don't like clowns and goes out of his way to be a jerk about being a clown. So it's one of those things.
I'm a clown. F you.
He has more costumes. He has
Frankenstein's monster, Dracula, and they're all amazing because they're about 12 feet tall, and it's him on roller skates and these things.
So this is maybe what I remember, that I was walking, and I don't think it happened to me, but it was some people in front of me where they were walking in, and it was this giant statue that was absolutely still, and then it just like leaned down
and
toward
the group,
them.
The pirate that handed you something was actually from our wedding party. We have every year at the bazaar, the last year and this year again, we have someone that gets married at the Voodoo Donuts wedding, and it's a legal marriage that happens at the Halloween Bazaar. And this year we're having a great our second annual Portland Halloween Bazaar Voodoo Donuts wedding, and it's happening again in the middle. And so the thing about the Halloween Bazaar is that it is very much a community event, and it is also an all ages family, classically Universal Monsters PG thing. We try and walk that really strong line between cutesy saccharine Disney and slasher torture porn European gore Halloween. We are just a classic middle of the road old timey Halloween.
And it really is something that is quite difficult to describe. But you can go to the website, which is PortlandHalloweenBazaar.com, and there's some more information on it.
I know last year you were going to go, and you know that I'm a big Halloween person because you've been in my house. But I am one of those people that just has skulls everywhere and stuff like that. So we're just like, oh, yeah, you've been to the going to the Halloween Bazaar. I was like, I don't think I'm going to make it. And the next day, next week when I saw him, he's like, dude, you should have gone. You totally missed it. And he talked about it for about 45 minutes and just shamed me.
We really went for it last year. We had the Hearst Club. I think they had six cars inside the event.
And this is, what is this group called? They used to be called, I swear to Christ, Hearsing Around.
Hearsing Around. And it's now
which is like the best name ever. What are they called? Are they Coffin Cruisers?
It's the Coffin Cruisers, and they are the largest active Hearst Club north of Southern California. And they are a group of, I believe, I'm probably going to be wrong here, but I'm thinking upwards, not quite 20 cars that are from the Vancouver, Portland area. And they were our first year when we started in 2008. And then last year we added the Driven Dead Car Club from Portland and Salt Lake City. And they have classic vintage 50s dark rides. And this year, sprouting out from the Tarantino's Death Proof Nova, we have a new car club. Our third year, we've added our third car club to be exhibiting, is the Cinema Classics Car Club. And they've got the Death Proof Nova. They've got the CW's Supernatural. Black Impala is going to be there. And also we're pulling hairs and hoping that their Scooby-Doo Mystery Machine will be there, because we're at Oaks Park this year, and it's a week after they close down their regularly scheduled ride season.
Which is just perfect. Which is just great, like the best thing ever.
So, yeah, half of the rides will be dismantled, but they'll all be there, and the lights will be up. And what's spookier than an abandoned amusement park?
Seriously,
I say nothing. Oh, yeah.
Just picture it's a Scooby-Doo episode.
Like a big wooden Ferris wheel sort of creaking in the wind.
it's very Carnival of Souls.
It's just awesome.
We're going to have the miniature locomotive will be up and running, giving tours, and we're going to have the hearses all done up around the track so everyone can get a tour of the park with all the hearses there and the classic cars.
Oh, cool.
We're also doing, we've added this year, we are a member of Green Halloween's initiative for National Costume Swap Day, so you can bring all your old costumes that aren't doing anything down, and we'll collect them up, and a couple hours down the road, like at 2, starting at noon, we'll do a costume swap. And we're also celebrating McGruff the Crime Dog's 30th birthday, so McGruff will be there.
This is really dangerously overloaded with things that are happening.
Well, it's fun because
it's a festival. Yeah, well, it's a celebration of the season.
We've got the Unchained Girls going to be there as the Witches of the Ages, all dressed up as different witches through the ages, and also the Undead Girls are going to be Brides of Halloween. So we want to do that juxtaposition of, yes, police and McGruff having their picture taken with Uncle Eerie, the local horror host and
yes,
stuff.
Yes, Uncle Eerie's Sherver Show will be there doing several sets. They are hilarious.
Don't you wish you could just live there, Dawn?
Oh, yeah.
Really, well, if you go into Dawn's, if you're at Dawn's house, you go into her, well, really anywhere in the house. But if you walk into her bathroom, the first thing you see is one of those, like, it's, I never know what they're called, but there's those pictures where it's like you tilt them and the picture changes. But
those were big sellers last year.
Stereo optic or something.
Yeah,
like that.
It's a fanged child, for like a Victorian child that sort of, looks undead
so
and creepy.
Fantastic.
Oh, look at Uncle
this.
Mortimer. Oh, he's on fire.
Yeah. Exactly.
And this is partially to benefit Portland Halloween Bazaar, and you can find out more about it at PortlandHalloweenBazaar.com, to benefit Friends of the Lone Fir Cemetery.
We are raising awareness. awareness for the Friends of the Lone Forest Cemetery Foundation and their acts of preservation and rejuvenation and education of Portland's Founder Cemetery. Anyone that has a street named after them here in Portland is buried there at the Lone Fir Cemetery.
Have you ever been? Have you taken the tour of the Lone Fir?
I haven't taken the proper tour. I've been to the cemetery, but
it's
I haven't taken the
awesome.
Tour.
It is
we
so.
We did it last year.
It's amazing, and
it
I
is.
And they do it year round. I mean, the Halloween one, the Dearly Departed tour they do at Halloween gets all of the attention. But I mean,
for good reason. It's amazing.
It's mind blowing. I mean, I didn't know what to. And it's the sort of thing that could really easily, in the wrong hands, or in another city, you know, be really hokey or cheesy, and it's not at all.
It's very tasteful. It's very true to the scripts. The scripts of these people that the actors are portraying in this tour are already entertaining enough. It's like watching a very Oregon-centric episode of Deadwood. I mean, these people lived hard lives to come out here and make this city what it is today, and it is respectfully handled and super entertaining and fun.
It's the, you know, basically what happens, you go there, and there's a massive line every year. So if you guys are going to do this at the if you're going to go to the Lone Fir tour, you got to get there. If it's the Halloween tour, you got to go early. But
it's worth the wait.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you walk in, and of course, it's after dark, so it's just pitch black, but then they have, you know, the sort of like the paper bag lantern thing that's lit.
100,000 luminarias going up on every, it's just to go see the luminarias lit at the level that they do that throughout the different walkways and paths that's there in the cemetery is just breathtaking.
And as you go through, they've got hearses there that are lit, that sort of illuminated from the inside with kind of the cool purple lights, and there's sort of the ambient music playing. But as you walk through with the tour guide, he will stop, and you know, it's just filled with these great towering like granite headstones, and you will, because it's dark, you don't really see it until it's upon you. But as you walk through, occasionally he'll bring you to a stopping point, and somebody, and it's not in like a "boo, I scared you" kind of a way. It's just a guy will sort of emerge kind of from the shadows, and he will then in the role of whoever is buried there, he'll just kind of say, like, "I was Portland's first, first chief of police. I was killed in a bar brawl in 1855.
Some grisly demise. I mean, that's the whole theme, is that it's some fantastical, entertaining way that this poor individual
wonderful
passed.
Wonderful actors involved in the project.
It's great.
Incredible.
It's really something. But again, the wait is like hours to get in. But they do those year round. And it's cool that you guys are bringing attention to them as well. I have to ask, just back on the Coffin Club thing. Mm-hmm. Hearsing around. Why would anybody have the name Hearsing Around
why
and decide
not?
To change that? Why
that
not be Hearsing Around?
I think there's
are
something. There's definitely
that?
There's something that we've found with a lot of the Halloween heads is that you already. It's fun to branch out and get silly with it because you're already instantly classified by the regular normal media and just the normies of like, okay, those people are spooky. And if you look at any Munsters and Addams Family, and that's what Jane and I really focus on the Halloween Bazaar, is that you can be completely immersed in the Halloween monster aspect and not be craving attention, mean or sadistic in any way. You can just enjoy the fun of being dark like that. Portland's first television horror host, Tarantula Ghoul, in the 50s, she said that she was a practicing member of Black Cross after Red Cross wasn't useful, or you know, second aid and stuff like that. And there's just that dark humor that's there. And Hearsing Around, that's Hearsing Around. I mean,
and plus those car club people, they like puns.
Yeah.
They really do.
They are punny individuals.
Bunch of kooks.
The Portland Halloween Bazaar happens Sunday, October 10th this year at Oaks Park. You can find out more about it at PortlandHalloweenBazaar.com. PortlandHalloweenBazaar.com.
It's from 12 to 6.
From 12 to 6. And just to go around the table really quickly to wrap this up, because it is the first day of October. And so this is, Halloween and Christmas really are neck and neck, my two favorite holidays.
I'm sorry, it's October, Rick? Really, what is this month?
I'm sorry, we haven't made the formal announcement about this yet, but we've decided to christen this Geektober here within the studio.
I thought that was Spocktober.
Coming from a long line of hack radio DJs, I just am conditioned to call everything, you know, like September, Rocktober. We were going to do, earlier this year, some of our favorite Hebrew entertainers, and it was going to be July, and then it was just like, we never got around to
every
it.
Every day we were going to share something important about Jewish history or something, and it was going to be July, but we didn't.
I don't even acknowledge Thanksgiving, though. It's just, for me, I really skip right from 4th of July to Halloween to Christmas, and then it repeats.
The stores don't let you. That was another thing, too, is I always wanted to envision November as the battleground between all of the Halloween monsters and the big red and green tinseled monster that comes out earlier and earlier every year. And November has just been devoured.
I sense that a new Rankin Bass special. So as we wrap this up, just to kick off October as well, we should go around the table, and I will ask each of you a high concept question, which is, we'll start with Don Taylor. Don Taylor, what is the most terrified you have ever been in a movie theater?
Probably probably John Carpenter's The Thing.
Really?
Great answer.
Good answer. Wow. Well done, Don Taylor. Jane, the most terrified you have ever been in a movie theater?
It was Halloween. The first time I was pretty young, probably 8 or 9, and it
You saw Halloween 8 or 9?
The original Carpenter Halloween?
Yeah, it was before the ratings. Yeah. My mom took me to see the jazz singer or whatever. I can't even.
You got $5, you can go in. Fine.
That's right.
Don't make any noise.
And my house was empty when I got home.
It's true. It's true. It's very suspenseful, and he has pioneered the music. And right now my ringtone is the Cordettes' Mr. Sandman, and she doesn't get it. I'm like, it's so that you don't know that Michael's the boogeyman's coming for you. The boogeyman.
I got to tell you, it still freaks me out every time. I mean, I am 37 years of age, and I've probably seen the original Halloween, I don't know, 50 times. Wow. You know, the scariest sequence in that movie, for my money, is because it's all about the sense of dread. First of all, have you noticed that no one seems to live in Haddonfield? That street is just empty. There's no one there.
To me, the scariest sequence in that entire movie is when she's running down the street, knocking on the doors, trying to get someone to let her in, and Michael's just walking down the middle of the street, and no one is answering their door. Yeah. That is just complete nightmare
time. Well, the precursor to that is when she's walking home alone, and she's with her friends, actually, and she sees him standing there, and then she turns to her friend and looks back, and he's gone, and it's the dung.
Dun-um.
Dung-dung.
Yeah. For me, there is the sequence she's running around and she's, and there's that horrible moment when she's at the front door and she's, where are my keys? And she's trying to get in and I'm just, when Tommy looks out the drapes and he sees at the house across the street.
It's the boogeyman's real, it's the boogeyman.
And it's like, and Michael Myers is walking up the stairs carrying Judith across the threshold and you just see it in silhouette.
Well, that's why they called him The Shape, because they didn't want to give him the name and he was originally just The Shape.
I wondered about that because in the credits, they listed somebody who I guess must have been
Moran, who played him, yeah.
Yeah.
He was listed as The Shape.
See, you're one of those guys like me where I don't think I could do it anymore. There was a time when I could name the actor who played Jason Voorhees in all 11 Friday the 13th movies, and I'm not able to do it anymore, I don't think. Ari Lehman, Warrington Gillette, Richard Brooker, Kane Hodder, and then somebody else, and that's
probably an ex-pro wrestler somewhere.
That's all I can do now. Jack Mariah, the most terrified you've ever been in a movie theater?
Most terrified I've ever been in a movie theater, honestly, was probably, it was short-lived because it was seeing the Blair Witch in theaters, not knowing what it was about, and I'm one of those guys that movie is written for. I have read so many horror novels and comic books as a kid that my imagination is the scariest thing that a movie can do. And I was so excited about that movie, watching that, and I was so entranced. And then I remember the second it ended, when they're all in the basement and the credits rolled, people actually stood up and booed because they never got to see the witch. And I was like, wow, are you kidding? That's the reason why that movie's scary. Did you see the rag with bloody teeth? That movie is scary.
Even kind of being spoiled a little bit before going in, I mean, by the time I saw it, the jig was sort of up. Mm-hmm. But I will say the last like 10 or 12 minutes of that film were just like pure unadulterated terror. I mean, they really were exceptionally well done.
As much as it wanted to.
And it was that sense of things just sort of spiraling out of control. I will say for me, it was when I was 13, my sister took me to see Aliens.
Ooh.
My parents.
Alien or Aliens?
Aliens, the Cameron. Right. And because my family didn't go see movies a lot. The entire time I was growing up, my dad only ever went to one movie the entire time that I was, when I was a kid. We went to see Ghostbusters, and that was it.
If you're going to see one
which
movie.
Which was great.
If you're going to see one movie.
The only thing my mom.
Mother Puss Bucket.
My mom took me to see two films. She took me to see Mr. Mom with Michael Keaton. And then she, because I believe she'd confused it with the Goonies, my mom took me to see the Ghoulies.
Oh, coming out of the toilet. Always out of the toilet is what everyone talks about.
We got to the moment where the guy says, "Hail Satan." And my mom's like, "We're leaving." And we stood up and we left and we never said anything. So my parents never took me to see a movie. So I didn't have a lot of theatrical experiences until I was a teenager. My sister took me to see Aliens. And it was the sequence. It was that moment when they've welded themselves inside, and and Vasquez is going like, 5, 10 meters, man, 5 or whatever. And
where are you? I don't see them. They're all over us, man. They're all over us.
And you're reading it wrong. And then he just says, "Well, that's inside the room." And then there's just that long pause, and they just look up at the ceiling. And I just thought to myself, oh, no, 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 no. And it was just, you know, you were at that moment, like, you are Hicks or Hudson. Who's Bill Pack? I can never remember.
It's Hudson.
Hudson is, yeah. But it was that sequence where you just, you know, a sense of vertigo where everything is about to go so terribly wrong.
Well, no, actually, the scariest movie I've seen recently that I didn't see in the theater, though, was when I saw Descent for the first time. And I didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal. The Descent basically is like, okay, here's what the Chud could have been, and you better be ready to get effed up. That movie, I spent 5 years on a submarine, and I have no claustrophobia. That movie was about as claustrophobic as you can get. But then once you got there, and it's like these movies nowadays, like, oh, there was a glimmer of the monster. That might have been the monster. No, this movie said, here's the monster. It's like Pumpkinhead. It's in your face, and you're there. Now what are you going to do? And that movie was genuinely horrific.
Yeah, so if you had asked me what was the last movie I saw that I was genuinely just scared to death in a theater, it was The Descent. The Descent is a genuinely really scary movie.
I think I saw that, and I think I had it. I think it was sold to me too hard. I mean, it was a good movie.
You were on cough medicine, probably.
I think it was Aaron, actually. It was like kind of, you know, he was really telling me about it, and I think he set it up. Maybe it's not like it's his fault, but I think he raised the bar a little too high just in advance. It was a fine film, though. It was. And I did see the British version, not the American version, because I think they recut it when they put it on
New
DVD
Zealand
for
stuff like that.
Did you see
for American
it in
audiences.
Theater, or did you see it on home video?
I saw it on DVD.
See, that's the other thing, though, is that was a movie that really benefited from seeing it in a theater because you spend so much of that movie in the dark, and it was just a great as an immersive experience
on the
big screen.
The re-release of The Exorcist in the theaters, I saw that in theater, and that was one of those movies that also benefited from being in the theaters because they introduced the wild sound. You heard all these weird demonic sounds behind you in the corner over your shoulder, and it was like, oh, this is messed up.
The last new movie I think that really freaked me out was I saw Rec, which is a Spanish film that was then made into
with Dexter's sister, right?
Was it made into a Quarantine? Was that the or Contagion? Was the American version of it, which is terrible, which is awful. But Rec was this film shot in Spain, and it's the first person like heads up display style film, but it's a zombie film, but it all takes place in. It is my favorite all-time film device, which is the people in an enclosed space, in this case, an apartment high-rise that is sealed that they can't get out of.
Right.
And there are, you know, and contagious zombies inside. And it's just sort of a ready, set, go. And it's just unbelievably terrifying. So if you get a chance, avoid Contagion, but see a film called Wreck. PortlandHalloweenBazaar.com is the website. It happens from noon to 6 on Sunday, October 10th. Jane and Jack, thank you guys for coming in. We appreciate it so much.
Thank you very much, you guys.
You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We're back after this with more from Don Taylor, as well as Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler, who will be in the studio here. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Show right here on the Emerson News Network. Don't go anywhere. We are back after this.
Miasteczko Halloween.
Działo się to dawno, kiedy świat był stary. Tam, gdzie rzeczywistość jest jak senne mary. Z tej historii dziwnej płynie pewien morał. Może go pojmiecie, kiedy przyjdzie pora. Chcielibyście wiedzieć, skąd się wzięły święta? Tego i najstarszy upiór nie pamięta.
Matką i głosem wywołuje dreszcz.
Witaj Halloween, witaj Halloween, 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 Halloween.
To nasz dom, Halloween, przerażający śpiewany w
To nasz dom, co od od wieków trwa. Kto ciekawy, co w zanadrzu jeszcze ma?
Tuż za rogiem tam w kuble zaszczy czaj. Jak wyskoczy, to dopiero będzie
i witaj w Halloween!
Kryjawicie!
Zielony splin.
Boisz się?
A za to jest ryzyko, fizyko. Babka wróży jak mi śrot. Chodzą się mocno, gradą szli.
Panika i wrzas, panika i wrzas.
Najprzeraźniejszy ja jestem klaun, który traci swoją twarz.
Jest, potem nie ma, czy wiarę temu dasz?
Ja jestem pustka, ja jestem rok. Ja jestem wiatr, co rozwiewa ci włos.
Ja jestem cieniem, co księżyca blask. Mączy, bo chcę usłyszeć swój wrzask.
Witaj w Halloween, witaj w Halloween. Halloween, 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 Halloween.
Halloween, Halloween.
Chłopcy dęba mają ci stać. Żyjesz, gdy się masz tego bać.
Taki fach
i taki styl.
Koszmar, maszkar, Halloween.
To nasz dom,
co od wieków trwa. Ciekaw ktoś, co za nas jeszcze ma.
Świetny bączek, niedługo da nam znak. Na wam ściepnie skóra, zobaczycie. Będzie wam widać Halloween, panika i wrzask.
Panie i panowie, przed wami wielki as.
Oto Jack, nasz król, halloweński kult. Wystrzałowego poznajcie mistrza.
Witaj w Halloween, witaj w Halloween.
Halloween, 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 Halloween.
To nasz dom, Halloween. Przerażający śpiewamy tym.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. Joining us here in just a few moments will be Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler from Fun Employment Radio. I'm going to take a moment to talk about Castalia Language Center. They are located in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. They're a Spanish language school, and they focus on adult education. What that means is when you go to take a Spanish language class at Castalia Language Center, you're not going to find yourself in a room with a whole lot of the people kind of elbowing each other for space or to get time to clarify a point with the instructors. They limit their class sizes to no more than 8 people, and they focus on education for adults because adults and kids just learn differently, and your brain changes a little bit as you age. And on that note, when it comes to keeping yourself mentally sharp and keeping your acuity at its tip-top peak form, there's no better way to do that than learn a language. So you contact Castalia Language Center at portlandspanish.com. That is portlandspanish.com. Clara Grebel, who is the owner and operator of Castalia Language Center, is a native Spanish speaker from Argentina, and she offers classes in a variety of formats, in a variety of times and hours to fit any schedule. So whatever day of the week works best for you, whatever time of day works best for you, they can find a way to make it work with your schedule. You can find out more about Castalia Language Center at portlandspanish.com. That is portlandspanish.com. Castalia Language Center, please do tell me you heard about it here. They're a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Show on the Emerson News Network. We return in just moments with Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler, as well as more news from the news desk with Dawn Taylor. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
When the little blue bird, who has never said a word, starts to sing.
Do it.
Let's do it. Let's fall in love. All the chimpanzees in the zoo do it. Some courageous kangaroos do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. I'm sure sometimes on the sly you do it. Maybe even you and I might do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love.
It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. Now, everybody's just following their comments in the text box with moot, just so you know. We're here with Don Taylor, who is tracking a variety of stories for you. We've still got the Geek Watch to get to, Stupid Criminal of the Week, and a Snuff Watch. So welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from Fun Employment Radio at funemploymentradio.com. Is it Mickey's time already? Is the big hand on the beer and the little hand on open?
Well, it's before 3 p.m., right? Why is everyone texting moot? That's one of my favorite words.
It's Dawn noted that if anybody ends a phrase with moot, that she immediately puts more stock in it, that it sounds more believable.
Yeah.
Now, I'm looking at the can of Mickey's Malt Liquor you have there. Now, do they do the thing with the can that they do with the bottle? Does it have the, is it like the wide mouth?
It is wide mouth.
Yeah,
yes.
It is a wide mouth bottle. But they don't have the fun little puzzles on the inside, of course, since there isn't a cap.
Because that was their defining trait when I was a boy.
Here, have your cozy.
It came with this. It came with this like with this metal like pull tab thing that you would take off the top, and it just had. And I guess the whole point is that it's so it can be consumed in a more rapid fashion.
You got to drink your malt liquor quickly.
That's
you can't
right.
have warm malt.
It goes
liquor.
Bad otherwise.
It's true. You sound like Lucille Bluth.
Good God! So I don't know. I don't know how it is that we even stumbled into doing this, but now this has just become. And don't get me wrong, it's fantastic.
So maybe not.
The beer is
too big for Sarah to put her beer cozy.
I usually can. It just takes a little bit of work.
Wait, no, am I to understand that the Fun Employment Beer Cozy actually doesn't hold the Mickey's?
Oh, no, it does.
Very. You were like to
just
work
a tighter
at it,
fit.
It just takes some gentle finesse. And I'm afraid I'm going to spill it on all this good, amazing food. So
I'm trying to figure out which mic you're on. You're on Chester there. All right, and Greg is on Anita. Okay. So we just fell into this thing now of every 2 weeks of having just the most like glorious concoction of food brought in. And I have to go heat mine up because I put mine in the fridge. And I mentioned that I passed Greg actually in the parking lot of Safeway this morning as
Did
I was leaving.
Did we all get our trashy food from Safeway?
No, some of us went to a fancy schmancy, like upscale Tualatin grocery store
that I've never even heard of.
I see. I don't even know what a Hagen is.
I don't either.
Don't they make slacks?
That's Hager. Yeah, no, Hagen is a big fancy pan. They used to do ads, TV ads with the Galloping Gourmet. Almost 10 years ago, but
I don't think Safeway's advertising with any gourmet.
It's a really they're a really really nice grocery store that has really really good food, but they're kind of on the expensive side, so I never go there and I never think about it. And then, like I said, I used to work at the Starbucks in the strip mall where Hagen is, and I used to go down there and get Chinese food from them because they also have really good deli Chinese food. I get it for lunch. I completely, now that I live there in Tualatin, I always forget that they're there because they're expensive, so I don't ever shop there. But I got coffee across the street from there at Dutch Brothers this morning. I went, hey, Hagen has a deli. I'll go there. So
is it like a Trader Joe's or is it like a...
It's like a Zupans.
It's like a
it's like a cross between a Zupans kind of New Seasons thing. It's a full service grocery store. It's everything you would expect from a grocery store. It's just a really nice grocery store.
Well, I think they only have them in the suburbs too.
Yeah,
I know there's one in like Oregon City. I think it's too fancy for Portland.
We're not allowed to have them.
We can't have nice things here, Don. Zupans is one of those places that is really great, but every time I go in there, it's like I preemptively feel like liberal guilt for paying like $9 for a cookie or something. And I think I really only go there late at night Laura and I will go there, like, we've been out somewhere, and we'll stop there, like, on the way home to get, like a snack item, because I can't imagine how expensive it would be to do. Because there are people in this world who do all of their shopping at places like Whole Foods.
That's how the other half lives.
Seriously, yeah. I just can't. I mean, I think even if I had the money to do so, I don't think I could feel good about that. I mean, it was just, I would just feel like a chump. You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I never can spend that much money at delis. Like, I like, New Seasons and places like that, but you go there and get, like, something, you know, as glorious as, say, their chow mein, and it's, like, $10. For like the same amount that you could get.
We're such rubes. $10.
Whereas I got
my plate of gold.
Amazing concoction of what I brought today for a whopping $2.50.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Real quickly, I should mention this. So Jack Moralia, who was the one of the guests that we just had on for the Portland Halloween Bazaar, he is the guy who baked the skull bread.
Oh. Okay.
Cool. We had that bread made out of like seven grain, or the skull made out of seven grain bread. There's a photo of that at rickemerson.com/pictures. That's the guy. He did that.
Cool.
So yeah, he's a baker at New Seasons. So all right, well, let's go around the table here and figure out what exactly we've got. And then I'm actually going to have to duck out a microwave mine, so I'll have to heat mine up. Dawn, what did you bring?
Well, I brought these meatballs in bourbon barbecue sauce. And then I also brought roasted squash, which looked far more delicious than it actually is. Really, it's just oven roasted pieces of squash. It's not that interesting. I just ate a bite of it.
So we salted it up a little bit?
Yeah. So I'm a little disappointed in my squash.
Yeah, I didn't want to say anything earlier when you said that you brought squash, but that... I just
thought it would be delicious. I thought it would be all coated in something wonderful magical and delicious.
Were you like the kid that no one wanted to trade lunches with ever? Okay.
I brought meatballs.
No, the meatballs and, you know, with bourbon sauce. I mean, that does go a long way.
Those do look delicious.
Barbecue sauce and booze.
Now, is it like a sweet barbecue sauce, or is it more of like a succulent kind of a thing?
It's a sweet barbecue sauce.
All right. Sarah Dillon, what did you bring?
Well, now I feel kind of trashy, you know, following Don's amazing squash and meatballs.
Well, ignore the squash.
If it makes you feel better, no one's going to eat the squash.
I'm eyeing those meatballs, though. I brought my favorite food, one of my favorite foods in the entire world, Safeway Chow Mein. The chow mein chicken from there, and you can get like an entire huge box of this, as I was saying, for like $2.50. Their chow mein makes me feel like, yeah, my white guilt, because I think it's like the best Chinese food ever.
This is so much better than actual Chinese food.
And look at this, like, look at how much it made out of this tiny box. It's just like, it's never ending and bottomless.
Well,
and
I don't know if this is true or not, but Thomas Gill in the text box earlier, he said, and you know, he knows many things.
He's a maven.
Mm-hmm. He said that Safeway and Panda Express are owned by the same people. So essentially, you're getting Panda Express Chinese food at Safeway.
That would make a lot of sense, because Panda Express is awesome.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, Panda Express is fantastic.
We call it crack Panda at my house.
And I can't do it all that often, because it's a little too, I don't know if it's too rich or there's too much, you know, like the oils or something, but it's like a little, it's like if you ever go to like a Mongolian grill kind of a place, and it's good and it's good and it's good, and then you get like one forkful too many, and it's like you're just, and you, it's like you feel like you're going to explode and die.
Oh, every time I eat Safeway Chinese food, I regret it.
Yeah.
yeah, absolutely. But I can't go to Panda Express, because when I went to, Oregon State, they had one on campus, and one of my friends got something with cabbage in it and found a bug in it, like a living
Why
bug.
Why are you saying so this ever before
since,
my challenge?
No, I'm just saying, like, ever since then, I've got in my mind a stigma against Panda Express. I can't go there.
Well, in my fancy...
But see, this is from Safeway. It's different.
In my fancy suburb where I live, we actually, the next, the Boone's Ferry exit, there's a Panda Express, and it has a drive-thru. And that makes it way too easy. It's just way too easy to have a drive-thru Panda Express.
Greg, you now say, Sarah, which Safeway did you go to?
The one on Hawthorne.
Okay, so Greg, what did you bring us on this Friday?
I brought in the delicious chicken strips, which actually I went to buy them, and I was thinking I was just going to buy enough, like one for each of us or something like that. And I saw them, and I knew that I would end up eating one before we got here, so I actually bought three extra ones for myself.
These aren't even really strips. So this is massive.
Oh, yeah. It's huge.
It's like a chicken chunk.
And so you bought some chicken strips to be the equivalent of the loose fries in the McDonald's bag that you eat, even though you bought lunch for yourself and another person.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's
pretty much.
There's something about fries being at the bottom of the McDonald's bag that makes them extra good, and I don't know what that is, but they're always way better than the rest of the fries. I got two other observations about these chicken strips, which, and Don's right, they're really not strips so much as they are, but they're boneless, right? So it's like so you know what they are? They're like huge chicken nuggets.
Yes.
I mean, that's really what it is. It's sort of like not extruded, but a word like that, where they've been sort of processed.
A chicken nugget, a deep fried chicken, but I mean, it's like battered like fried chicken, though, so it's better than a chicken nugget. It's like the size of your fist. It's
like
huge.
It's like if you had fried chicken made out of chicken nugget. That's kind of that. Mm. That really is, because it's shaped like regular chicken, but it tastes like it's a superfood, really.
It's so white and flaky on the inside.
That was for the longest time. That was the food of choice whenever, like, I would go to a poker game, and it would, you know, you would, like, you would, you know, everybody was supposed to bring food, and that was the thing, because you could clutch it in one hand, and it was, you know, a little greasy, but it was relative. It wasn't messy as such, and it was universally accepted. I mean, you know, everybody was fine with that. Also, to this day, and I think I've mentioned this, whenever Laura is out of town, or whenever I'm just, like, left to my own device, and I'm going to be eating usually, and it's usually a thing I'll do on a Friday because I eat way too much of it, and then I just sit around all bloated. So what I will do is I will buy a box of Triscuits and about half a pound of these chicken strip nugget things, and then just some really, really trashy tube of liquid cheese, and then that's like the entire meal for me. And sometimes
you're crazy, Rick.
And it's the other thing of, like you said, where sometimes you'll get to the point of, like, I'll make it to the microwave and the heating stage, but occasionally I don't. Occasionally I'm taking it out of the bag. And Dawn has seen me. Dawn was observing how I open Triscuit boxes, which is where I don't do it carefully and pull it apart. I just sort of go, you know, and I just rip the top off. Sometimes I will be taking the Triscuits and the chicken and the cheese out of the bag, and then I will, about 10 minutes later, I'll just find myself standing there at the counter having consumed half of it, not even having heated it, just sort of, just sort of shoving it all inside. So, anyway.
I think what makes chicken strips even better, honey mustard sauce. Mm. I do love a good honey mustard.
I like a mix of the ranch and the honey mustard.
Mm. All right.
I
brought two different things here. I didn't know what kind of Chinese food you were bringing. So I got some of this, and it's fascinating because it's like a day glow red. It's this General Tso's chicken.
I was going to bring too.
Right there. And it's just, I mean, it's
that's
like,
my favorite.
Yeah, it's like devil red. So I'm going to go, heat this up. But then I lived in fear that I was going to be bringing the same thing you did, so I felt the need to get a backup food. And that backup food, these are Safeway Deli pizza sticks.
Oh, wow. Oh.
And that sticks with an X, by the way. That is STIX right there.
Wow, that looks incredible.
That looks awesome.
It looks either like a really giant fish stick or a really narrow pizza pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Or a really pale cigar.
Yeah, I mean, it's I've never tried one of these before. I have no idea if they're good or not.
Greg and I both can't take our eyes off of it as you're holding it. I'm not even looking at you. I'm looking at those.
I'm going to go heat them right now.
Okay.
So I'll tell you what. So why don't I'll turn the show over to y'all while I go heat my food.
Okay.
We'll go to the news desk with Dawn Taylor right now, and I will return with this food. Ladies and gentlemen, please give your attention to Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Wait, before you go, this story takes place in Orlando, Florida.
I'm sorry, where?
Florida. Just so we don't miss out on that. Two horses carrying mounted patrol volunteers headed to Orlando's new Amway Center were struck by a vehicle driven by an Orlando City Commissioner's father. Charlie Ings, the father of Orlando District 6 City Commissioner Sam Ings, crashed into the horses just before 8 a.m. Friday at Norton Avenue and Church Street as the volunteers were headed to the opening of the Amway Center in downtown Orlando. According to Orlando police, the horses, named Peanut and Captain, were walking in the eastbound lane when a Lincoln Town Car, driven by Charlie Ings, hit the horses from behind. Police said Charlie Ings put the visor down because of the glare from the sun and didn't see the horses before striking them. One of the civilian volunteer riders was taken to a nearby hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. The other volunteer refused to go to the hospital. The horses were taken to the Orlando Police Stable for treatment. The condition of the animals was not released. The investigation into the accident is ongoing, and it's not known if Charlie Ings will face charges.
That's kind of sad.
Yeah.
I like, though, that it was the elderly dad of the city commissioner and on his way to the opening of the big, fancy, billion-dollar new, mm-hmm. like, arena thing. It's like, just crashes into police horses.
Well, I just like that their names are Captain and what was the other one?
That's Peanut. What I mean. Who names a horse Peanut? That sounds like a little yipper dog name. Mm. It doesn't sound like a horse name.
Well, it's like naming a chicken Grain. Because don't horses eat peanuts? No, I guess horses don't eat peanuts. Elephants supposedly eat peanuts.
Yeah, elephants eat peanuts. Aren't horses carrots? So you can name a horse Carrot.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go. Or like Gwyneth Paltrow's daughter, Apple.
That name annoys me for some reason.
Really does, yeah.
You shouldn't name people or animals after food, I think, at all. That's just wrong.
No. My friend that I was hanging out with yesterday, her daughter or her son's name is Coltrane, which I thought was like the coolest name ever.
Coltrane?
Coltrane.
Wow.
That. Yeah, I've never heard that name before. Mm. But it kind of reminded me of like Cold Duck and Night Train.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or Colt 45 is what I was thinking of. But
yes. To the listener who told me to stop talking with my mouth full, oh, get used to that, sir. There's going to be a whole lot more of that when Rick gets back and we start actually eating.
Nom, nom, nom.
I know people. I used to always eat my lunch like during the show when we were on terrestrial radio. And people would get so mad. They would write in and just be like, stop talking with the mouth full. And, like, and it just made me want to do it more.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So this seems weird. Hmm. Just us here.
Well, this is like us sitting in the kitchen, but with microphones in our faces.
You know,
did you want a beer?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Do we have any beer in there?
Do you have any? No. If you don't have any beer, that's fine.
I can do I believe Don, we do
what
have
kind
some
of
beer.
Question is that? Do we have any beer?
Hey, you didn't that one day, and I ended up drinking Kahlua.
Just
asking if they had beer.
The rest of that's still over there.
Well, they offered me a beer. She offered me a beer and then was unsure if they had any.
All right, so I brought the General Tso's chicken here.
Oh, my God.
And
thanks, dude.
Which the guy in front of me who was ordering at Safeway, there was a long-ass line at Safeway, by the way. I mean, it was a lot. I mean, it was like at 10:45 or 11. There were already people lined up.
Yeah.
The guy in front of me insisted on pronouncing it, and he did it several times. Like a big barrel-chested guy said, give me some of that General Tso's chicken.
Well, let's talk.
So I have that right here. Now, I'm...
Oh.
Does anybody else find the microwave confusing in the kitchen?
It seems super powerful.
It seems like it's got like so many features I can't actually turn it on. Like I don't really ever know. There's no button that just says like I want the thing with just a dial where you just, you know, turn it to like 60 and then hit start.
It's smarter than all of us.
I'm attempting to heat the pizza sticks, but it's a
This smells incredible. Oh.
I am looking forward to the pizza sticks.
Yeah. I know, me too. And the meatballs.
Extra plates.
Can we, are we supposed to start eating yet? Or do we have to wait here? Because I think I'm going to sample a meatball.
Oh, my God.
I'm taking a little chicken here.
This General Tso is so good.
Hence the name.
Do you want some
chicken? Wait. That doesn't make sense.
Sure. I do.
So, we're on the radio. Oh, yeah. We should probably talk about something.
You mean I don't want to be eating General Tso's?
Meatballs. Okay.
Oh, this is my favorite.
So, what are you tasting there?
I just had a delicious bite of the General Tso's. I think I'm going to have another one.
Okay. I'm going to try the General Tso's.
Oh, I'm going to actually try one of your meatballs. I want to eat one of Don Taylor's meatballs.
Hot. Mmm. Why is the General Tso's chicken so delicious? Is it because, I don't know, let me guess, it's battered, then deep fried, then coated in some kind of sugary sauce?
In some kind of like sticky, sweet, amazing sauce. Have you ever had General Tso's?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I prefer the orange chicken. The orange chicken is my favorite one. But what's kind of amazing, though, is how well all of this actually does go with the malt liquor that we're drinking.
Ayo, it tastes really good.
Kind of cheers.
I'm enjoying a frosty Miller High Life myself.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow, the meatballs are quite delicious.
They are really... Okay, I'm going to have one more. Just one more. Yeah, I usually get the General Tso's, and then I'll get also the sesame chicken and the orange chicken, like a scoop of all of them, and then mix them all together.
Can you do that? They let you do that?
Yeah, you can mix whatever you want.
Oh.
Well, of course, they let you do that. You're buying it from them.
Well, yeah, but I mean, does it cost extra? Because I won't do anything that costs more than what like the meal deal is.
I'll
split the chow mein and the rice. But I always thought you could only get one scoop.
You mean the express special?
Yeah, the express special. Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever. The $4.95 or whatever it is. As long as you get an extra egg roll, I'll get the extra egg roll. That's about it.
I think the pizza sticks are ready, but I can never tell. Pizza pockets are weird, man. It's like sometimes you don't think that they're you don't think they're done, and then they're like molten. And other times you're like they've got to be ready by now, and it's like they're still frozen on the inside.
Yeah.
So these are pre cooked though. So all I had to do was heat them. All right.
Bless you for bringing General Tso's. I'm sorry, I'm obsessed right now.
Is it good?
It is incredible because it's hit and miss at different Safeways. I actually go to specific Safeways when I'm in Bremerton to get the better prepared General Tso's.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think you're more upscale Safeway.
My parents live in Silverdale, and there's another Safeway in East Bremerton. And we will get in the car and drive an extra 15 minutes to go and get the Safeway Chinese food from there because they prepare the chicken better.
Yeah, when I lived in North Portland, I don't think either of them are there anymore. I might be wrong, but when I lived in North Portland, there were 2 KFCs on Lombard. And it's kind of like the same way there's 2 Popeyes on Killingsworth. And one is the good one, and one is the bad one. And you have to make sure you go to the good one.
Now, wait a minute. What differentiates the good Popeyes from the bad Popeyes?
I don't know how to explain it. The chicken is actually better at the one Popeyes than it is at the other, and the service is faster.
See, I would think that would be a thing where they just, like all fast food places, where it just like comes out of a barrel, you know, truck.
There is. You're right. There's a difference in the Popeyes chickens, because I love Popeyes chicken. And I don't go there very often, but I prefer that one that's down on MLK where everybody's really angry, but the food is really good. Like, you're scared to order. But yeah, it's so much better.
Yeah, because there's two pop-up guys. I said killing to order.
Oh, God, yeah, I've been scared down.
When you
there
say
so
they're really
times.
Angry, you mean the clientele or like the actual help?
No, the servers.
Wait, can I get some food? Yeah. Maybe!
No, they just sit there and glare at you. I remember that I went in there and ordered this one time. I'm like, yeah, so, you know, I'll get this and this. And the guy just sat there and stared at me and said no word. Just like, and stared at me the entire time while punching the buttons, just glaring me down. He's a tall guy. Like, okay. Should I say anything else? Am I okay?
And there's always a million people.
Should I not be here?
There's always a million people going through that drive-thru, and nobody at the other Popeyes, which is like only a quarter mile away, because that other Popeyes sucks. So you go to the good Popeyes. Everybody knows to go to the good Popeyes. So there's a million people at the drive-thru. So you go in, and then if you pause at all, if you don't just get up there and bam, 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 order, yeah, they get annoyed with you.
Oh, yeah.
They're angry.
But I would think that Popeyes would be, since it's a chain, I would think it would be, you know, like have continuity, like in Starbucks. Like if you go to a Starbucks,
that's
all
my
the coffee
thing. I would think
same.
It would all be the same.
But then again, I just said the Safeway chow mein thing, so never mind.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
All right. So we're starting to do. Never mind. We were starting a beef with one of the local Popeyes franchises. I remember going there the first time, and you know what? The thing that hooked me at Popeyes was those biscuits, which are just, man, and I got to tell you, like a well done, and I don't know, like, again, if it's like they're frozen or if they're from a mix or if it's whatever, but you know, like a well-done biscuit, that's hard to do, especially at a place where they're serving like a jillion of them a day. And they were fantastic, because I'm not a big chicken guy. Like KFC, the thing about KFC, have you noticed this? Because Popeyes doesn't necessarily do this, but I think it's because the chicken is more moist. At KFC, it just like it turns your mouth into the Sahara Desert. You get halfway through a piece, you're like, oh, I need liquid so badly.
The thing about KFC is I think they over-make chicken. So then it just sits in this bin for, like, way too long. So you have this, like, promise of delicious crispy fried chicken, and you go to KFC and you buy it, and then you get it home and you pull it out, and it's, like, sodden and gross, and everything's just kind of peeling off of it. Whereas if you go to Popeyes, it is. Actually, it's like these delicious chicken strips we have here. The coating is actually really crunchy and crisp and really delicious.
It's just like these delicious chicken strips we have here.
These are excellent chicken strips.
It's hard to believe that people don't think we're sophisticated.
Did you eat your General Tso's?
Yes, I did. It's quite good. And the thing about General Tso's, especially this kind from the Safeway, is that it's like it's one of those things where Sarah said, like, you know that you're just some pig American.
Oh, yeah.
You know, can I get my chicken with a candy coating, please? And can you make it glow? I'm zen with that. I'm fine with it. I know that this bears no relation to, like, actual Asian cuisine, but you know what? That's fine.
Seriously, people have gotten mad at me when they're like, oh, have you been to that new Chinese restaurant? I'm like, no, but I totally got an express special the other day with this, like, amazing chow mein.
Well, you and I have bonded over the fact that, you know, we're big fans of the Kraft macaroni. And
you can't even talk about it.
I'm just saying. Well, I don't eat it nearly as much as I did because I found that it was making me, you know, gain hundreds of pounds. Mm-hmm. But there was always, whenever you talk about Kraft macaroni, there was always someone in the room who will say, well, do you like, you know, like real macaroni? And I'll say no. And they'll say, well, you just haven't had mine. Inevitably. Mm-hmm. And I think Dawn is actually, I think you've actually stated that.
Probably. Yeah,
and I'm not disputing it. I'm sure it's fine.
I brought some in here and it was my homemade macaroni and cheese and it had little bits of chopped up kielbasa sausage in it and a little bit of mustard of like stone ground mustard added to the cheese. So I mean, it was quite delicious. And Rick's like, I only like the Kraft. I'm like, well, you're missing
out. It's true. And my grandmother did the same thing where she slaved away and made us all this like this really like ornate macaroni and cheese meal. And then she gave it to my sister and I when we were little and we're just like, ew, we don't
want this. What is this?
Do you guys, when you're in other countries, end up going to the McDonald's?
Yes.
I don't go to the McDonald's, but that's only because I don't go to McDonald's in general. That's just I typically don't go to McDonald's that often, but I will gravitate to American chains if they're over there. Like a pizza. When I was in Scotland, there was like a Pizza Hut,
Pizza Hut in other countries is so good.
Threw a bite, and I told Laura, I'm like, hey, there's a Pizza Hut right there, and she just like she didn't even stop. But left to my own devices, I would have yes.
When I lived in London, I would go to Pizza Hut constantly because they were everywhere. They're like little teeny Pizza Hut, like you can get the mini pizzas. Yeah. And then also in Paris, I went to McDonald's there and it was one of the best hamburgers I've ever had in my life.
Now, was the food like way different at
it
the...
It was different. Like at like a regular McDonald's hamburger in Paris was like a lot bigger. Like it looked more of like a, you know, like a, I don't know, like a professional, but you know, like more of an actual hamburger than just like patties slapped to get, you know.
It kind of looked like the picture. It wasn't like the compressed sort of
and
like...
And it tasted amazing. It was so good.
You know, the Muddy River Nightmare Band, I was talking to our friend Brent, who went to, I think, Tokyo. on
can't
tour
resist anymore. I'm gonna grab one of these.
And oh yeah, is that the pizza sticks?
Yes.
Okay, now I don't know how hot they are, so.
All
right. You have to let me know.
There you go. Thank you.
Uh-huh. These chicken strips are fantastic, by the way.
I told you. You mocked me.
Oh my god. Mm.
The pizza stick, thumbs up.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, I am a big fan.
This is so good. The bread is like. It's so flaky. It's like greasy. Like you touch it and like your hand's covered in grease.
They taste like I'm really going to regret eating this.
Oh, yeah. No,
but
it's like
I'm going to eat it.
The grease is soaked all the way through. There's not one part of this yeah. breading that is like dry.
Yeah, because this isn't pizza crust. This is actually a nice flaky pastry.
Really?
With
so
pizza,
it's like a pizza turnover.
Inside. Exactly.
Okay, I got to get one.
It's like a pizza turnover.
You have to.
All right, I've got five of those. I think one, two, three. Yeah, so there's an extra. But so Brent had gone to Tokyo with the Muddy River Nightmare Band, and he said that it was, the Ramones always said that their whole thing was they couldn't wait to get to cities that were big enough in other countries that had a McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
Brent's the same way. He's like, we've just been eating all this, weird, foreign cuisine. Sometimes it was good, and sometimes what he's like, we saw a McDonald's, and we're like, we're there. So he goes into the McDonald's. He doesn't speak Japanese, obviously, and the guy, very broken English, and so but they had a picture menu because they get a lot of, a lot of tourists and people don't speak Japanese. And so he just looks at the picture menu, and he looks down and he said he had this moment of realization where nothing on the picture menu was familiar. I mean, there was just nothing that looked like anything he would order in the States. And so he finally found something that kind of looked like a quarter pounder, and he just pointed at that, and then he held up his fingers like, two, give me two of this. And the guy gave it to him, and he just took it back to his table, and he opened it, and he said whatever it was just covered with fish sauce and seaweed.
Oh.
And he said it was just the saddest moment of his life when he realized that, A, he was not going to get his quarter pounder, and B, that his happiness, that he was here, and he was like in an entirely, he's in a foreign country, one of the great cities of the world, and that his happiness depended upon getting a quarter pounder served to him.
You have to try this.
I had a boyfriend who
Seriously. Okay, these pizza sticks are awesome.
It is one of the best things I've ever tasted.
I had a boyfriend who was sent for his job to Tokyo for a while, and he went to a Pizza Hut in Tokyo because he was not enjoying the local cuisine very much because he was definitely one of those kind of guys that would eat sloppy joes and fried chicken all the time, you know. And so it was this weird foreign food. Went to a Pizza Hut. He actually brought home the menu from Pizza Hut as a souvenir because apparently in Japan they don't really understand what a pizza actually is. So even at Pizza Hut, it's they have mayonnaise and fish on them.
Yeah. Ew.
No, thank you.
Rick and I are both. He just inhaled his. Mine's almost done. Don Gregor.
This is one of the best things I've ever had.
I told you.
This is really good.
They were a little expensive. Just for your in terms of your deli food.
This is so good.
They were $1.09 each, which isn't like a bank breaker, but I'm just saying they were more than I expected them to be.
I think I've got to have one of these once a month for the rest of my life. I'm just going to let myself one a month.
there was no per pound price noted. I'm assuming you could get them by the pound, maybe. They might be cheaper that way.
The meatballs are really good, but they've gotten a little cold. So I don't know. I'm just saying.
I think we need to get a toaster oven. Haven't we already talked about that?
Yeah.
Were we talking about that off the air or on the air the other day?
I don't know. I think I think it was off the air.
Yeah.
And I think it was in advance of this, actually, that we were deciding that was going to be the next outlay of cash needed to be for a toaster oven.
I don't know. I can only eat so much at a time. See, I eat this stuff really slow.
Mm-hmm. So I just inhale. I'm
this kind of food, this is what I'll get if I want to, sit there and watch, an episode of Dexter or something like an hour, 2 hours of TV. And then I'll eat it slowly over it.
I think the General Tso's chicken is perfect for watching Dexter. Mm. It's the right color. Uh-huh.
Hey, I envy your restraint.
Did you guys see Dexter on Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
What did you think?
I don't know. We were talking about it. I'm not sure how I feel.
We gave it a big eh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it seemed like nothing actually happened.
Exactly.
Because I was so anticipating what they were going to do, and then it just kind of didn't really go anywhere.
Well, I thought they were going to go with the whole thing where he's on the run for this entire time.
Right. Yeah. See, and that seemed like it was going to be interesting if he was actually going to. And I thought for a minute it was going to be actually a bold step. They were going to ditch, maybe they would cut back to the people back in Miami and sort of, see what they were up to, but that he was actually going to strike out on his own and have a new life. And then at the end, he's like, I guess I have to go back. And he sort of. So the entire episode was just like a big circle of him wondering what the hell he was going to do with his life and then, and then heading back to Miami.
Well, it seems like. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it seems like to me. I mean, and I could be wrong on this, but I think I already know what's going to happen this season.
Feel free to predict.
I think Quinn obviously is going to become a problem, whatever his history is that they keep alluding to over the other seasons.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to go after Dexter. Dexter's going to end up killing Quinn, but I think Quinn something's going to happen with the sister, and I'm wondering if they're going to kill her off.
See, and I think that he, when they had sex on the floor of the kitchen, that he knocked her up.
Oh, hey.
Oh, that could be.
That's, I don't know, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the moments in the show where I just sat there and I thought, why am I watching this? Mm. Because as soon as they showed Quinn and Dexter's sister,
Deb.
Deb. As soon as they showed them, like, mopping and, you know, like, whatever that is, I thought, well, they're going to F on the floor. Like, there's just no, because it seemed like a thing he wouldn't do. He's just, like, such a hard ass. I had no idea why he would be there helping to clean up a crime scene. And so it was, like, no surprise to me when they started humping. The other thing is, I don't know if you guys were here when I was talking about this, the Dexter books actually take such a strange turn where it turns out, I don't know if you guys are ever planning on reading them, but it turns out in the Dexter books, I think the most recent Dexter book, the big revelation is that the reason Dexter is a serial killer is not because of the thing with his mom and the chainsaw and the boxcar. It's because he is, I swear to Christ, possessed by a demon, an actual literal demon, and they have to exorcise him.
I really hope they don't go that route with this.
What? Well, like, do they have a big exorcism scene?
There's a whole black mass service, and I think that's like why I think that's why the television series got so far off track, because unlike True Blood, they don't have the source material to work with anymore, because they can't, you know, obviously the TV audience doesn't want to see that. So it's a whole lot of bad. I mean, I'll keep watching it. I feel like that show may have, it just seems like they've run out of ideas. Mm-hmm. That's the thing.
And it just felt like with the whole Quinn thing that it's just almost like a repeat of Dokes to me.
Right. Yeah. That was, well, yeah, they're just retreading old ground.
They're just
doing
the same thing again. And then at the end, you know, of course, Dexter's going to win and Quinn's going to die. La,
yeah,
la, la.
Quinn's going to die. I mean, he's going to be the opposite of Dokes in that Quinn has done something, like something really bad, I think, is what's going to come out. Because that's what they were alluding to with that other woman that was, the other detective that was trying to hunt him down.
Right, well, and then that he was corrupt or that he'd done something in the past.
He's done something.
So Dexter will be justified in killing him the way that he kills all the other, like, he'll find, like, his dark past and then do the whole slide.
Yes, but that does make sense, though, that if he knocked up Deb, then Dexter's going to kill the father of his sister's unborn baby, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, therefore, like, could totally play.
Yeah.
Because she has like that. Yeah.
She can do the dead eyes pretty good.
I was just going to say, she totally has the dead eyes. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. I think we are back up, so across the board. In just a few minutes, we'll sort of wrap up and get out of here so you guys can do your Friday installment of Fun Employment Radio. Woo-hoo. What is coming up on your program today?
Yes.
Damn you, woman.
It's a flavor I just thought of. We have Big Jim coming in, actually. He's going to be joining us.
Big Jim, and then also our intern / ad guru, Kenny B, brought a giant thing of Sunny D and a giant thing of rum.
Yes.
Fantastic.
We're going to be experimenting.
The funny thing is, you sounded like you got a little.
It's a flavor I just thought of.
Oh.
Sunny D and rum, yum.
I think I'm gonna get me some.
It's like you got a little bit drunker just now as you were describing what he brought. You said, and he brought a thing of rum, too. It's like your vocal quality degraded even as you were saying that.
I haven't drank rum.
We are a good 20 minutes after we were supposed to end, and we have like. Do we have one or two spots
we have
still
one.
Need to do? Okay.
We have one left. Which
and I still
right
have
now.
To do Stupid Criminal of the Week.
Ah, it's so very exciting. There's so much to do in so little time.
I'm just saying.
The Rick Emerson Radio Program brought to you by a fine variety of business partners, including a brand new ally of ours in the broadcasting of entertainment to the people. That is SquiresElectric.com. SquiresElectric.com. You can find out more about them at SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. It's their phone number, 503-252-1609. They've been in Portland for over a decade. They handle electrical wiring, wiring of any kind, Ethernet wiring, whether it's for your home, whether it's for your business, whether it is a single socket, a single outlet, or whether it's a massive building of Gaussian proportions. They can make sure that it's done right and that it's done right the first time. Did you just stab Greg in the armpit with a fork?
No, she's pointing out that I'm sweating quite profusely.
But I mean, like, they're pretty impressive, his spit stains.
See, this is why I never wear shirts. That's why I always wear black shirts.
I sweat just as much as you, which is why I always wear patterns.
I know. Yeah.
I mean, you got to wear something that's dark colored.
No,
I
always do. Fashion statement.
It's the one day I decided to wear something else. It was laundry day.
Hey, is your life force still leaching out of that hole in your ankle?
It still itches.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
All right.
It does.
Oh, I didn't need to know.
Now, there you go. These ruminations about Greg's sweat glands and the nature of his ankles, which seem to be constantly under attack by arachnid life forms of all varieties, brought to you by Squires Electric, 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They'll get it done right. They'll get it done right the first time, and you will not have to do what I would almost certainly do, which is to wade into the depths of your basement trying to fix something only to electrocute yourself later, bringing eternal shame on your friends, family, and on your house forever. 503-252-1609. You can find out more about them at SquiresElectric.com. Free estimates, no job too small or too large. And it's Squires Electric, 503-252-1609. A proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Show and a proud business partner of the Emerson News Network. Let's pay a visit to the news desk with Dawn Taylor right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Because it is time sensitive, we have to do the snuff watch.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, here is your snuff watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here is your snuff watch. This is Dawn Taylor.
Stephen J. Cannell, the prolific writer-producer of dozens of TV series that included The Rockford Files and The A-Team, has died at age 69.
Why do they always get the good ones, Sarge?
Cannell passed away at his home in Pasadena, California on Thursday night from complications associated with melanoma, his publicist said on Friday. After 3 decades as an independent producer of TV shows, Cannell in recent years had focused his attention to writing books and had published 16. As an actor, he had a recurring role on ABC TV's Castle.
Well, he was one of the guys, if anybody watches Castle, he was one of the guys at the card game. He was one of the writers at the card game along with James Patterson, I think. So Stephen J., is it Cannell or Cannell?
I've always pronounced it Cannell.
Me too, but that's like a whole Shannara Shannara thing, right? I never really knew. So people who are my age or older will remember in the 80s. It's like in the 70s, everything was a Quinn Martin production. In the 80s, every single television show you saw seemed to be done by Stephen J. Cannell. I mean, he did...
Greatest American Hero,
A-Team, The Rounders, Riptide, Hardcastle and McCormick, Jake and the Fat Man. I mean, that's like 7 right there, and those were all major, and they were all hits to one degree or another, and ran.
Yeah, at one time he had 5 or 6 shows on the air on like different networks simultaneously, which is unusual.
How old does it say? How old he was?
He was 69.
69, and it was from a melanoma.
Yeah.
See, and that's one of those things where it should be comforting, but it's really not to know that even if you are incredibly wealthy and powerful. That you can still get hosed early by cancer.
He's also been writing detective novels for years, and I believe he actually... It's possible that he wrote the first of the Castle novels that are being released as tie-ins with the TV show. It's unclear, because it might have been him, but the second one, I believe, was written by, like, maybe one of the writers for the show. But the first one, I think, might have been written by Cannell.
Because the theory is that if you're watching the show Castle, which is the Nathan Fillion show where he plays a writer who hangs out with the NYPD to sort of, you know, get ideas for books or whatever, but he has this poker game that's a recurring plot device where he's playing poker with other famous authors, but they are actually other famous authors, and the rumor is that whoever is at the poker game, those are the guys who are writing the real-life Castle novels that you can buy.
Yeah.
So it's all very complicated. Well, that sucks. I'm legitimately brought down by that. Yeah. But I mean, I guess he had a good run. I think he may have been the guy behind Airwolf too.
Yeah, I think so.
But I mean, with a wave of his hand, that guy was just creating a show after show. He probably was responsible for more hours of television, more primetime hours of television in the 80s than anybody else. It was that same period of time when like Mike Post seemed to be doing like every TV theme song. So there you go. So Stephen J. Cannell, dead. There is your snuff watch for Friday right here in the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Have we, in the whole business of the great off-turning and then me getting everything fired back up again,
And amazingly enough, Sarah was noting that having our own business means we are obliged to fix things ourselves, like let's say the feed when it goes down. It's actually still more stable, and the phones work more correctly than they ever did at CBS.
That is very true.
What is coming up on Fun Employment Radio today?
Yep. Let's see. We have Big Jim coming in, former coworker. You guys know Big Jim.
Yes. I think he was on your show last week, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was here promoting. He's doing an open mic. He was doing an open mic thing at the Shamrock, I think, at any second. So.
Yes, we're having him in. I love hanging out with him. He's hilarious.
Yeah, it was quite a show the last time he was here. And we're going to be sampling Sunny D and Rum, so that's... I can only imagine where this is going.
I am kind of nervous. Yeah. Especially now with a stomach full of like General Tso's chicken and like all that stuff. And then mixing that with Sunny D.
Oh, it's a cushion, Sarah. It's there to absorb the harmful alcohol.
That was well planned.
The epitomes of health.
You know, you're just sitting there like having taken one bite of that pizza stick. It's like you're taunting the rest of us with it.
Pretty much.
All right.
I'm going to save it.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Dawn Taylor.
We have to do our stupid criminal of the week. Or should I say we get to do
our stupid criminal of the week. Irreplaceable opportunity for which we are eternally grateful to do stupid criminal of the week, brought to you by mugshotlist.com. Mugshotlist.com, run by our longtime listener and friend, Andy. Covers 19 counties in Oregon, 13 states, including Florida, Georgia, Texas, and Ohio, always adding more counties and states. And mugshotlist.com provides this stupid criminal of the week. And in just a moment, we'll be announcing the winner of a mugshotlist.com full membership, courtesy of Andy. This is Dawn Taylor.
A Las Cruces, New Mexico teenager who defecated in a man's car, mistakenly thinking it was his girlfriend's, has been convicted and sentenced to probation. Austin Horace Purifoy, 19, is headed into the U.S. Army, which is aware of the charges, said 3rd Judicial District Attorney Prosecutor Michael Heitz. Unfortunately, the owner of the befouled Honda Civic was turned away from the car wash where he attempted to take the car afterwards and had to clean the damage himself. Leaving work late the night of March 11th, the car's owner reported finding Purifoy in the back seat of his Honda Civic, pulling up his underwear. "This is your car?" Purifoy said before bolting the scene. "I thought this was Desiree's car." I've been in this office 3 years now," Heitz said Tuesday. "It's the first case where I've seen something like this happen. It's an unusual case, to say the least." The car's right front window had been shattered with a rock. The glove box had been rummaged through and some coins had been taken from a film canister. Police also discovered a cinder block had been thrown through the glass door of a business a few yards away from where the Honda had been parked. Footprints leading from the door to the Honda were later found to match Purifoy's shoes, which had a distinctive dot and circle pattern.
Now, wait a minute. Had he attempted to defecate in the car, or had he actually accomplished it? Like, was it a thing? Was he able to really pull it off?
He accomplished it.
Okay.
He did it.
So it seems like then, you know, his fingerprints and his footprints are sort of... I mean, that's all well and good, but that's just bonus evidence, really, at that point.
When he was located in a nearby ditch, he told officers that he was outside because he didn't want his girlfriend to see him smoking.
Okay. Not so much that he was going to poop in her car.
That he had just pooped in her car.
Except she wouldn't be so mad about the smoking, right?
It's like setting the bar appropriately, really. Except that it wasn't her car anyway. Okay.
Purifoy, who has been undergoing treatment, apologized for his actions in court and has repaid the business $349.17 to fix their window and paid the car's owner $154.90 to fix his car window. But as mentioned before, the owner was turned away from a car wash where he tried to have it cleaned and had to clean up the poop himself.
The best part is the use of the word befouled to describe the car. Also, we seem to have, I mean, just as a culture, an astonishing number of stories of guys who are deciding to relieve themselves number two style, sort of, you know, in something or on something that belongs to a hated enemy. And I never really understand how that works. It's like, what sort of planning or scheduling must be involved there? I mean, is it a thing where you got to, like, really...
Sure, you're not equipped to, like, insta-poop.
You got to plan that out for hours.
It must just occur to you at the moment. He knew he was going to break in and steal the coins and rummage through the glove box. He had let off some steam, I guess, with the cinder block through the window while he was in the car.
Well, I got all this poop with me.
He realized, man, I really got it. You know, while I'm here.
It did say he was smoking. Maybe he had a big cup of black coffee with that, too.
Maybe he has the appropriate roughage or chemical aid.
All right, there you go. There's your Stupid Criminal of the Week, brought to you by MugshotList.com. And this week's winner of a MugshotList.com full membership is Laird Robertson. Laird Robertson, you have won a full membership to MugshotList.com, which gets the full searchability, lets you browse mugshots by categories like county and gender, and lets you view unlimited pages. And again, you can find out more about this at MugshotList.com, run by our good friend Andy. So there you go. Fantastic. There is your Stupid Criminal of the Week. All right. So before we wrap this up, is there anything else have we done everything we need to get done today? Have we accomplished?
I believe we finally accomplished everything.
All right.
Yeah. I didn't do two watches, but you know something? So be it. I just kind of basically say, San Diego Comic Con, going back to San Diego. And the guy who invented the taser killed himself.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll have to do that Monday, even though it's going to be kind of dated. There's just no way we can't get to that. Mm-hmm. FunEmploymentRadio.com. That'll be up later on this evening, usually 5, 6 p.m.
Probably 6.
Yeah, it's going to be closer to 6. Because Big Jim plus drinking plus Friday.
Going to be a bit of a ragged afternoon,
yes, it will
probably.
Yes,
a tummy full of Safeway Chinese food and pizza sticks.
And Sunny D and rum.
So that is coming up later on this evening. Check that tonight. That is Friday, October 1st, 2010, at funemploymentradio.com. All right. Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Miller, thank you all for joining us. I also want to thank Jane Hollenbeck and Mr. Jack Moralia for joining us from the Portland Halloween Bazaar. All right. On that note, we will get on out of here. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk is Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Sagler. Our chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News episode, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you, of course, due to a generous grant from y'all. So thank you for listening. It is Friday, October 1st, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, have a good weekend. See you Monday. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.